across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Take a trip into the alternate reality of Late Night Radio.
I think I'm in something like The Matrix, and so are you.
Speech Radio. With a difference.
Is there anybody out there?
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Word up, funsters. Yes, it's your occasional pal Rufus here, standing in for Ian Lee, and, you know, at this point, we'd always choose to introduce Kath. Kath's not here either, it's Hayley.
Hello.
Hello, Hayley.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good too.
Yeah. Now, Hayley and I don't know each other at all. She's probably more familiar to you than she is to me. So part of tonight's show will be finding out all about Hayley, so we're looking forward to that. But as ever, on the Late Night Alternative, it's not about, you know, what we want to talk about. It's about what you want to talk about. And how do you join in? Well, you pick up your telephone and you call 0344 499 1000. That's 0344 499 1000. You can always text us. I'm going to have to look at the text number because I can't remember that off the top of my head.
87222.
87222. You've got to start your text with the word talk, and then that comes through to us. But let's be honest, what a boring thing to do when you could instead be speaking to us with your actual mouth. So, Hayley, are you ready for this voyage of discovery?
I am. I'm quite excited. But I want to know about you too. I'm quite boring.
Are you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, that's gonna make the next 3 hours really drag.
Yeah.
Well, look, my life is an open book.
Okay.
There is nothing you can ask me that I won't answer.
I'm quite open too.
Well,
so this is going to be fun. It's like truth or dare, isn't it, really?
It is. There's a brinksmanship to this, Hayley, that could possibly see us both fired.
You don't seem
that bothered by it.
Well, I don't know if you can get fired, because technically you're just covering, so technically you don't have a job,
yeah,
really. So can you actually get fired?
Well, I suppose the answer to that is, will I make it through the entire 3 hours?
Oh, I'm sure you will. You've got me.
You've got far more confidence in this than I do.
I do.
Have you been watching any of the Winter Olympics?
No, because it makes me feel cold just by watching it. You know how you get motion sickness when you see people do, like, flips in gymnastics?
Well,
I get that when I watch people on ice but feel the cold.
Do I know what you mean?
You must know what I mean.
I think that's mental. That by watching people in the cold, you feel cold.
No, because say you're watching Home and Away or Neighbours, do you not feel the warmth?
No.
You feel like the sun on you?
No.
So it's just the same thing?
No, it's... Yeah, I mean, I get that for you it's the same thing, but I think that's... That could be a mental illness.
Okay.
Is this a thing I have missed out on? Are people lighting up the switchboard to tell me that of course that's what happens? So does that happen in all ways? Like if you watch Godzilla, do you feel the need to run?
Yeah, you get scared when you watch scary things, don't you?
Sure, scared when they're trying to scare you, but not necessarily feel the feelings
of
where
it's set.
Well, I mean, that is also a problem.
Yeah.
I gave up on feeling things some time ago.
Okay.
I think I can thank social media for that.
Oh.
Because you start off thinking, oh, this is a funny joke, and then you get 300 tweets from people going, mate, you're an idiot! Why would you think that? And you think, oh, I see, the trick to this is to feel nothing, to remain dead inside.
Yes. Every tweet, you just lose a part of your soul, really, don't
that
you?
seems to be how it works.
Yeah.
I've been watching. Look, this is why we're on Talk Radio, not on Talk Sport, is don't really care about sport.
Well, they're jumping around like lunatics outside.
They've been watching, and again, if you're listening to this, you don't care about sport either, because there's a perfectly reasonable radio station at your fingertips if sport were your, thing. But apparently, a very low league football team in the shape of Wigan.
I was going to say Wigan.
Has just beaten a pack of billionaires in the shape of Man City.
Was it Man City or Man United?
No, I think it was Man City. Oh. See, this is the kind of sporting insight you can expect here at Talk Radio.
This is why I don't work next door, you see, because I don't know the difference.
Because we don't care.
No.
Because it's a game.
It is a game,
nobody's meant to care that much.
Oh, see, now we do get on.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
I think that's different, though, to the Olympics.
But how?
Well, because most of those sports are pretty fringe, really. And this is their, like, one shining moment. They've got this kind of... The global spotlight is upon them. And people who, you know, basically live their lives freezing cold, trying to get better at a thing, when it all comes together, the little faces, how delighted they are.
It's all momentarily, though. You know, the next day they forget about it.
Oh, sure, but philosophically, all of life is but a series of, you know, it's butterfly wing flaps.
Isn't it? Yeah.
But is it not... On some level rewarding to see those people get their one moment in the sun. I think the reason I'm not really that bothered about football is that it's just the idea of what it used to be makes sense to me. I do go and watch the football occasionally. My local team, I can't even tell you the name of the league it's in. It's like, I think it used to be the Ryman's League and now it's something else. But it's like properly local
Ryman's
footballers.
League.
They're like
you get
part-timers.
Free stationery.
Yeah. You have, when they give you a ticket, it comes in a ring binder.
Oh, brilliant.
So I like that. I like the fact that it's like, oh, this is our local, these are our local fellas that have, you know, that are playing for the badge. They're playing for the meaning of it all. But once you start buying in people from around the world, it's just, this is the brand that I choose to associate with. It's like being an enormous fan of Claire's Accessories.
I love Claire's. That's my favourite shop ever.
So that's
serious.
That would be the shirt you would wear.
Yes.
A glittery sports top pink with Claire's written across
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, I think Gillingham in Kent, they've got an away kit that's pink, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, there's somewhere in Gloucester that I think has a vegan football team.
Oh.
Somewhere near Stroud. Again, why we're talking about sport when neither of us know anything about it and we're working on the one station that is in the same office as people who do this professionally is foolhardy at best.
It's contagious.
Maybe that's what it is. Anyway, I've been quite enjoying the Winter Olympics and the Olympics is one of the few things that I, you know, kind of get behind.
What sport would you do if you could?
Well, I've snowboarded a bit. There's a friend of mine who was super into snowboarding who insisted that I come with him on one trip about 7 or 8 years ago and said it was the closest you could get to feeling like flying. And that perked
cool.
my interest. Yeah. So having done a bit of snowboarding and really enjoyed it, when you see the snowboarders going off over the ramps and, you know, grinding down pipe, what are they called? Rails. Grinding down rails, going over jumps. It's like, especially at some of the speeds they're going, you know, you land that thing badly, you're dead. I like that element. There's a risk to it.
Yeah. What was his name? I always wondered how you get into something like that.
Well, from listening to the interviews with many of the winners, it seems that you have parents who are super into it, who basically strap you to an ironing board at the age of about two and then expect you to get better from that point onwards. And, you know, some of these guys have done just that. Yeah, it's properly exciting. I think any sport where somebody might die is more exciting.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's no shortage of that in the Winter Olympics. Have you been watching any of the Winter Olympics? Do you have a particular... favourite who has emerged? Are you now a huge fan of Sean White or a Swiss curler? Let us know. 0344 499 1000. One man who I'm surprised has found time in his busy schedule from flipping from the racetrack to the gym and back again is Alan Caddick. Very good. Alan, how are you?
Hello, man. I see a new face in the voices beside you. Where's Ian and Kaz tonight?
I genuinely don't know. All I know is that very early this morning I got a text saying, "Are you about tonight?" And you know, when given the chance to share my darkness with you all, I take it.
Yeah. Well, look, I've been flicking through the channels before I started, and I've just been watching a bit of Naked Attraction, because we know we like a bit of Naked Attraction.
Well, Alan, what you do in the privacy of your own home is entirely your own affair until you ring up a national radio station and share it with us.
No, the girl has been making the choices.
Yeah.
Her name is Judy. She's 28 years old, and she was going for the basics of naked dating.
She's going through the basics.
Yeah. Look, she's never done it before.
So what are the basics?
You've got six people to look at from the bottom, literally, up. And you've got to narrow it down to one person to go on a date with.
I mean, that's the format of the show.
Yeah. It's like she's never seen a wee willy winky before.
So, well... What? Hang on. Oh. Where do we even begin with this? I suppose the main question is it's just a format of a television show that gives people an excuse to look at naked people. So we can't really take that seriously.
No, we can't. But like I say, I've found something which is a lot better.
You've got what that's a lot better?
I found something which is a lot better.
Oh, you found something that's a lot better. What, than the Wee Willy Winky? Or
Extreme Cake Makers.
There you go. A stalwart of late afternoon Channel 4 television.
Yeah, which you do the brilliant voiceovers for.
Well, that's very kind.
And I was making a record player cake today.
I haven't seen today's one, so I can't remember. I did the voiceover for it about 6 weeks ago. I did the voiceover for all of those before Christmas. So I can't remember. But they're always impressive cakes. That much I do know.
My favourite one before today was the wino cake.
Yes, Molly Robbins.
Genius. Puts the Americans to shame, because they've got their own version of that called Cake Boss with Buddy Velasco.
Yeah. Cake Boss.
I mean, have you ever thought about Buddy coming to do one in the UK?
Have I ever thought about it? I think you're overplaying how important I am in the British televisual landscape, Alan. I'm not making those kind of decisions. The decision I made was, do you want to do the voiceover for a cake show? Yes. Are they paying? Then I do.
Well, you have got a pattern of food and drink, because you did do Celebrity Juice.
Yes. But again...
Nearly with food and drink.
Appearing on a low level on British entertainment shows still doesn't allow me to commission international reversionings of American formats.
Well, I'm surprised they haven't got to America, Celebrity Juice.
Don't you think it's, like, intrinsically British, though? I mean, you know, I don't know if the reason Keith Lemon is funny necessarily translates overseas. Don't get me wrong, he's a very funny man, and I could imagine that lots of people in America would find him funny, but isn't all of that, like, you know, the kind of crazy man from Leeds thing, quite a British take?
Well, he did do that movie.
Yep, which did very well over here, but I don't know that it did much business in the States.
Has Haley ever seen that film?
You've only ever seen that film?
No, I've only ever seen that film.
On repeat.
Yeah. Every time he goes to his local cinema, they're only showing Keith Lemon the movie.
That's weird, that.
No, but that's what I'd see was the new Star Wars.
Yes, The Last Jedi.
Yeah, which was really good. Spoiler alert. But Luke
spoiler alert.
Not The Last Jedi.
Well, that's... But, you know, or is he?
That's something I have to tie up in episode 9.
Yeah, well, that was always the plan. But I don't know about you. I remember before they did the... Oh, no, it was just about as they were doing the prequels, the whole talk was that by the time we got to the 2010 kind of era, that all of the actors would be the right age to play themselves again with the kind of same gap between the prequel and the original movies as would be between the original movies and the three movies. Because I think many years ago, George Lucas said he had conceived of it as a 9-part story, but then when the prequels were so badly received, he said he wanted nothing to do with them because the fans basically, who had adored him for all that time, had, by the time the third prequel... I'm trying to remember the name of it now.
Revenge of the Sith.
The what one?
Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith, that was it, yeah. By the time that rolled around, everybody was just slating George Lucas all the time.
And then they handed it over to J.J. Abrahams.
Yeah, which again annoyed the fans, principally because J.J. had a kind of a reputation of making quite simplistic science fiction, and many original Star Trek fans felt quite betrayed by what he'd done with Star Trek. Star Trek was always seen as sort of quite smart sci-fi, And the Star Trek movie, when he got hold of it, became kind of more of an action movie, which was the last thing old-school Star Trek fans wanted. Yeah.
Or the Trekkies.
I think they don't like being called Trekkies anymore.
I think I mean, in the old days, it was a common name for them.
Yeah, but I think it became a bit of a kind of tarred with a certain... Like, actors being called lovies. It becomes a... What's the word I'm looking for? Not disparaging term. That's it. Disparaging.
I love the song. Can we find the song? Please, can we find the song?
I've got a feeling the last time I was on air, Alan actually sang the song.
Oh, that's even better.
So you've tied
it
all in
beautifully.
Let's do a live
version.
A bit like Doctor Who fan being called Whovian.
Well, no, you see, you know, just to be contrary, I think Doctor Who fans self-identify as Whovians, but I think Trekkies became a term that was used to kind of be mean to people who liked Star Trek, and so they renounced it. I did warn you, Hayley. There's Klingons on the starboard bow, starboard bow, starboard bow. There's Klingons on the starboard bow, starboard bow, Jim. There's life, Jim, but not as we know it. Not as we know it, not as we know it. There's life, Jim, but not as we know it. Not as we know it, Captain. Simon Cowell, if you're listening, and I know you're a regular listener to the Late Night Alternative, this triple is ready to go. Alan, can I just check with you? Have you been watching any of the Winter Olympics?
I've been watching a bit of the curling.
Yeah.
I mean...
A bit of a result today. The ladies beat the Swiss team.
Yeah, we're still on course for a gold medal.
Well, we're on course for a medal. I think we've had a few matches on both the male and female teams that have implied that maybe we're not quite we live in hope.
Yeah, like Elise Christie tomorrow in the speed skating.
Oh, that poor woman. Yeah. I mean, that is the one kind of side of sport that makes me kind of get sport, that kind of level of drama where you feel like if there was any fairness in the universe that she would have at least qualified, and to be taken out again and again when she's won all those world championships. You know, on paper, she is the gold medalist.
It's a bit like Tony McKay winning everything and not quite winning the Grand National till he did in 2010.
Yeah, it's exactly like
the
that. Hayley and I, our eyes met there, and we were like, that was exactly what we needed, a horse racing reference to just bring us right back in. Alan, have you got anything else to share with the nation?
Well, we're down to three in negative attraction now, and they're actually speaking.
Well, don't let us keep you from it. Alan, as ever, a pleasure.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
I wasn't expecting this music. Sam, are you on the ones and twos tonight? Are you just going to mix it up? Oh, this is Ian's music.
It makes his evening more interesting.
I can see why. It's got a natural bounce to it that's reminiscent of Ian's walking gait. So, yeah, all right, fine, fair enough. I get more of a kind of porno thing going on. Where's my regular music? Hang on, Sam's just finding it.
DJ Sam.
Well, maybe it's not important now. Let's talk to Gatford, shall we? We'll talk to Gatford. You all right, Gat?
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Hound. Good evening, Ms. Haley, because I don't know your surname. And it's not important for this conversation, so I hope that's an OK introduction.
it was formal and to the point.
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to side with Haley. I do know what she means about cold sports and warm sports.
Thank you.
I get a very warm feeling whenever I watch women's beach volleyball.
There you go.
Sorry, easy gag.
Have you been holding on for the last half an hour?
Actually. I mean, that's... No, I do have something else. I've noticed...
But with the right topical cream, the doctors assured you it can be gone within a fortnight.
Oh, OK. No, a fortnight. I was hoping for quicker. I've noticed something in the last 2 weeks, and then I've noticed this week it's gone.
Again?
Do you know those things on the high street or at supermarkets where you can leave packages? You know, those big, huge lockers.
Oh, yeah. So if you're getting an internet delivery, rather than them putting a card through your door that says you weren't in so we couldn't leave it, they say, we'll just go and pick it up from over here.
Yeah. I only found out about them 2 weeks ago, and now the two that I knew about have gone.
Huh. Are you sure?
Yeah, I checked. I asked at the supermarket. I said, is the thing gone? Yes. And the other one, I just noticed it was no longer there.
So,
but, like, how is it they've come and disappeared within 2 weeks and I've only just found out about them? How has that happened? How has that happened in this world of communication? How has that happened?
Well, look, if what you want is insight and genuine answers, you have come to the wrong place.
If you want that by Caddick, really.
if you want vague guesswork, then pull up a pew. Because my guess would be that that as a service is a trial. You know, it's a new thing. So they would build those bins, because they're all done on, like, smartphone apps, I think, is basically you go and then they text you a code and you put a code in, it unlocks.
Open sesame and it opens.
Yeah. But
I wish it was that. I wish it was voice recognition.
Well, it might even be that you know, hold a QR code that they send you on an app, or, you know, there's all these ways they can try and make it as secure as possible. But I would imagine that they put them in a place, and if, you know, over the course of 2 months or whatever, they don't really get used, then they can just pick them up and take them somewhere else and give it another go somewhere else. So it might not be that they've, you know, nixed that as an idea. It might just be that it wasn't particularly used where you were. Certainly the fact that you didn't know about it.
The thing is that what you're saying is, so if I bought something and left it in there and then they decided to move it, my package could now be in, like, Wigan or Thorpe.
Yeah. Or maybe they've just moved it. You know, sometimes you go to the supermarket and they move an aisle, like they move the bread, like, to a different aisle just for the fun of it. Are you sure? Are you sure you've looked hard
enough? Yeah, no, because I was standing in the place where it was 2 weeks ago.
But that's my point. Maybe they've moved it to another place.
I didn't check the whole supermarket. You are right.
I normally am.
It'll be nestled between bog rolls and face wipes.
Yeah.
You can pick up a Blu-ray.
I'm going to have to ring them now and find out.
Could you let us know?
Of course, I'll know. I'll text in later and let you know. Well, I don't think they're open, though.
You're up in Catford.
I am.
I'll tell you the thing I've been seeing around, and I don't really live in the heart of London. I live in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And just recently I've started seeing these, you know, the Boris bike thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was everywhere. Well, now it seems there are a couple of independent companies doing something very similar.
I saw somebody with a Boris bike in Catford, and that's the first time I'd seen them, because they don't normally come out this far.
No.
But it made me wonder whether he'd pinched it.
Yeah.
In Catford, like.
Like you used to do with shopping trolley type things, apparently.
Well, these aren't the official Boris bikes. These, I found out today, they're like GPS bikes, and there's some electronics in them, and you download an app, and then literally this app shows you where a bike is near you, but there are none of the special... Like, with the Boris bikes, you have to find a parking...
Yeah, 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 they're all lined up somewhere,
yeah, and dock it, and then it recharges and all of that. With these bikes, people just leave them by the side of the street, and you look at an app and there's one... So, despite living about 16 miles from the centre of London, at the end of my road, outside the corner shop tonight, was one of these bikes just left there. So, I wondered, is this a national thing? Are there loads of these services springing up? Has somebody worked out how to make that pay? Or is it just, you know, classically these things happen in the southeast and then no one gets a look in?
But what's to stop you not having the app to get that bike and just pick it up and go?
So, the person who had got off the bike had just literally left it in the middle of this pavement bit that's on a corner and there's lots of kids around there. So I thought, well, I'll move that out the way. And all of the wheels on it are locked.
Ah.
So, and it weighs a ton as well, so I had to lift it up and move it to the side of the road. But I'm guessing whatever the GPS that's in there would mean that if it was getting nicked, they would be on top of that fairly quick.
Give you an electric shock, that would be good, wouldn't it? That'll teach
you. Yeah. Yeah. Some scally, you know, riding down a road thinking, oh, I've got this, and then all of a sudden getting a shock up his jacksie.
Yeah. Yeah, why is that bloke going at 50 miles an hour?
Well, you get nicked for breaking the speed limit as well. Double whammy. No, I haven't seen those. I'm now going to look out for abandoned bikes on the sides of roads.
Yeah, they're like... that was the thing. It didn't look kind of particularly unusual, but it was more the colours on them. I started to see loads of places, and I only ever saw them on bikes that were parked at the side of the road. And it made me think, oh, that must be a thing now.
It's a thing, yeah.
I wonder when they're going to sort of extend this to bigger vehicles, like motorbikes or cars that you can rent and drive. And you
they
know,
already do.
They do. They do.
That exists.
Rent. Yeah, yeah. You can just...
Like on the sides of roads that you can just...
Yeah, no, they do.
You can do this.
Yeah. I've got a mate in Bristol who, whenever he comes to London, literally comes out of his front door, fires up the app. I think there is something that you... They've got in the car that when on the app you walk up to the car and you hold the phone near the car. I don't quite know how it works, but basically the car unlocks, you get in it, and then the car starts.
What a world we live in.
And you drive to London, you park it, you know, somewhere you haven't got to pay. And, it's...
good luck finding that in London.
Yeah.
Hey!
Quite.
Park it in Bristol, probably.
And walk. The Ryanair of car hire.
That's a really great idea. I hope someone's making money out of that. It's a blinder.
There's loads of companies doing it. I used to live near you in Blackheath, Gatford. And,
oh, yeah.
Loads around
Gatford.
Posh bit of
Gatford, that is.
I'm very posh.
Yeah.
You can't move for top hats in Blackheath.
You can't. Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen lives there.
Does he?
Yeah, and his house looks like you would think Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen's house would look like.
It's like a Rococo dream.
Yeah, drapes outside.
Yeah.
And, you know,
velvet everywhere.
That's it, yeah. You got it.
Terrible in the wet. Well, look, Gatford, thank you for sharing. If anybody else has found these... parcel lockers,
yes,
or knows that if you're in logistics, then phone up and let us know how the is this a failed experiment? Are these things being removed? I know that in America, you know, like in a lot of American movies, if they've got to hand over a ransom or something, then it's
I have
you
the
go
old
to,
MI6 thing in my head, and do a dead drop.
That they go to the bus station and they leave a big sports bag full of money in a locker at a bus station or a train station. That was pretty standard in America. And in these days of terrorism, you can't have, you know, a locked thing that people can leave a massive bag inside for all the obvious reasons.
Is that why there are no swim baths anymore?
Is that why there are no...
swimming baths anymore. Because that's the only place I can think of where you get lockers that you can get the key for. They're all shut down because of terrorism.
I think that might be austerity that did for those.
Oh, okay.
Although I quite like the idea of, you know, walking in, locking a locker, and by the time the bomb goes off, the pool's already put out the fire.
Yeah, it's not the best place that you put a bomb, really, is it? If you were
thinking about it,
I've thought all this through, thankfully. Just in case the authorities are listening. Thank you very much.
Maybe
I shall keep listening in case anyone can answer my question.
Yeah, do. Yeah. Is anyone out there in logistics? Have these lockers been shown to be either some sort of security risk, or is it just that no one's using them?
Yeah.
What's going on with this? If you know, 0344 499 1000. As Gatford wends his way off into the night. Angela's in Coventry, though. Hello, Angela.
Hi, Rufus and Holly. Good evening.
How are you?
I'm not too bad. And you?
I'm bobbing along. Are you cheerful?
Yeah, I am. A bit strange, isn't it?
No, well, last time we spoke, you were feeling a bit wobbly, but I think you were telling us you were finding solace in... was it some of the people at church?
No, it wasn't to do with church. It was something, but I couldn't say much on the radio, or people think I'm weird, but I am weird anyway, but a lot of people are supporting me. I have got friends at church, but a lot of people supported me over it.
Oh, great. Well, this is fantastic. So you're in a chipper mood.
Yeah. Well, someone said to me, where have you been? Shut up. Where have I been? So I said to my partner, shall I say, I found a time thing where you go back in time to have a look at the old Coventry, or do I say the truth? So I told him I went back in time and look at the old Coventry. Did it text me?
Now, have we spoken about Coventry Market, Angela?
No, but the Coventry Old Market, I remember just about. But it has changed a little bit. Why?
Well, because... Are you familiar with the fact that it was on the Harry Hill... Was it... I'm just trying to remember if it was on TV Burp or whether it was on Tea Time, the new one he had on Channel 4. It might have been, no, it was Channel, he did a new show on ITV called Alien Fun Capsule. And basically it turned out that some years ago, I think it was BBC Local News, did a nationwide thing where they picked places of kind of weird interest and then wrote musicals with the people who worked there. And Coventry Market basically has its own musical.
Yeah, it does.
So are the people of Coventry aware of this? Do they know about it? Are they proud of it?
They probably do know aware of it. I think my mum does. But I think my nan would have been aware of it if she was here today, because she loved the market. But, yeah, I think I've seen it on Facebook.
I've got Sam Googling it now. Coventry Market, the musical. If we can, if we can find it, I'm tempted to play some, because I didn't know Harry Hill had featured it on his show, so I just saw somebody tweet the musical and thought, I wonder what this is. And we've watched that thing in my household probably 60 or 70 times. I have favourite bits. We know now almost all the words. It's one of the most exceptional things I've ever seen. So this is a musical performed by people who genuinely work, live and enjoy Coventry Market. And anyway, shall we have a listen?
I do.
Angela, shall we have a listen?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. I'll describe what's going on in this. A man is opening Coventry.
Not a soul in sight.
It's empty.
The only sound is my feet. Echoing on the floor.
It's empty, Coventry Market.
I remember this place opening 50 years ago when I was a barrow boy.
And at this point you're thinking, is this all
but
it is?
There's no time for memory. Long days ahead. It's time to open up the door.
And the doors open and the crowds pour in. Something for everyone. There's no comparison.
Genuine bargains. Explore what's in store. Confused or amused. Just ask what it's for.
Treasure of wonders. Exciting, enticing. Sippy kind of bopping. And all kinds of
November the 14th, 1940.
Tonight our town was raised to the ground.
So about the bombing of Coventry in the Second World War.
The night we watched our home, then livelihood burned down.
The night they tried to kill our town. 1958. But in the cathedral's ashes we found home.
Market, the first of its kind. It's been hit for 50 years, come rain or shine.
Key change.
Something for anyone, there's no comparison.
For Indian fabric and Jamaican bread.
A wonderful cafe, some beautiful bedspreads.
A treasure of wonders, exciting, enticing. It's everywhere, I'm holding.
It's all kinds of everything.
It's only halfway through.
Bombliano, Coventry Market. Spero che tu sia molto fiero. Ti aveva già cinquant'anni. Ma che bello sarà questo giorno.
I played here when I was a kid and my mother had a store.
It really hasn't changed at all.
This is our home. This is the answer to our prayer.
About immigration into Coventry.
Far from the violence and the misery.
This is a place where we can be who we want to be.
Come see for yourself, don't just take it from me.
Coventry Market, Coventry Market, Coventry Market.
my favourite bit now.
Although I'm not complaining,
it can be financially draining when you fall in love with the lady who sells rugs, and you have to buy a carpet every time you lose your nerve and fail to ask her on a date.
Thank God they're married now.
Crescendo.
Tattoos,
and cashews,
and big hair, and big underwear,
waxing, relaxing,
and nail care,
and hardware,
distilling, fulfilling,
just milling, it's thrilling.
Key change again! This thing will not quit! Angela, does that sound like the Coventry market you know?
Yes, definitely is.
Cheered me right up.
Late night conversation worth losing sleep over.
Late night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
I mean, the voiceover man's exactly right. I am Rufus Hound. I am standing in for Ian Lee. This is the late night alternative. And you can join in. We talk about the things that you want to talk about. And the way that we do that is by you picking up the phone and calling 0344 499 1000. Yeah. Our airwaves are your airwaves. Mi radio es su radio. I don't even know if the Spanish for radio
is
radio.
What does that mean?
Well, mi casa es su casa means my home is your home.
Oh.
So mi radio es su radio would be the same, right?
I think so. I don't know French. I know j'habite. So, this is my home. Isn't it?
No, j'habite is I live.
Oh.
Or, yeah, j'habite and then en Londres.
Same thing.
I live in London. You know, let's be honest, any kind of European enthusiasm is not necessarily where the hearts of the nation currently reside. Gavin's in Bishop Stortford, though, and that couldn't be more bloody British. So let's speak to him. You all right, Gavin?
Mucho gracias, compadre.
Muy bien, muy bien.
Yeah, mucho, mucho. Right, let's have a go at the universe. How about that?
Yeah, love it. Absolutely love a bit of universe chat. Do you know what I spent my evening doing?
I don't know if you remember, last time I had a chat with you about the universe, you said you're interested in the chocolate orange theory.
The chocolate orange theory?
Yes.
Remind me?
Right, if you take a single perspective within the middle of a chocolate orange...
Yeah.
...and all the little layers, all the slices, fall away, they fall away in 360 degrees, so there's slices above you, below you, left and right.
Right.
And they're all the things you've got to look at as your universe. But what happens is there are loads of these different chocolate oranges all next to yours that sometimes link, like gears meshing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're talking about parallel universes, are we?
More linked universes.
Linked
really.
Universes. So there are universes outside our universes. It's not...
That is what it boils down to.
But so it's multiverse theory.
Yeah, but people cleverer than me have postulated further. It's kind of blown my mind, and I'm not even sure that I dig it completely. But the idea of multiverse theory is the idea that things can operate within the same space, within the same time, in the same atomic state. You can take it down to quantum physics, which means that it might be in loads of places at once. But the easiest way of explaining it is if you get a fork and you put it on the table and you put another fork on top of it,
yeah,
the two mesh, so two things can occupy the same space at the same time.
Yes.
And now these cats, what they think, they've sussed the fundamentals of the Big Bang, because what we're taught, and is absolutely true, is the Big Bang becomes from a point of absolute infinity, and it's almost like a singularity in the black hole.
Yeah.
And then it expands, so out of nothing.
Hang on, I'm going to stop you there, Gavin, because there may be people listening to this who have no idea what you're talking about. So, Haley's got her hand up. So I will explain this very quickly so that nobody's left behind. I used to work at the Science Museum explaining science to people, and I think that all of these things are totally understandable, but you've just got to kind of break it down a little bit. So the thing about a singularity...
Please interrupt me.
The singularity in the universe, right, is that... I'm not explaining this to you, Gavin. I know you get this, but I'm explaining it to Hayley as a conduit to explaining it towards people who maybe aren't familiar with it.
Yeah, I was kind of flying, man.
So, the idea of a singularity...
All right, Hayley, how you doing, man?
I'm all right, thanks. Yeah, I'm good.
Beautiful.
The idea of a singularity is that everything in the universe, all matter, was at one point...
And time and space.
Time and space was at one point densely compacted into this ball of energy isn't even necessarily the right word, but basically everything was just sort of so tightly compacted down.
It was so tightly compacted, it didn't exist.
Well, yes.
You've really lost me now.
Yeah. It's
that's the problem, right?
That's
the weirdest thing to get your head around. It was so small and so tiny that it didn't exist unless, you know, if you fire a bullet, it's got a cap that you have to, like, poke.
If you fire a bullet, there's a bit at the back of the bullet.
Yeah, you've got to trigger it.
There's a pin that hits this tiny... Like, it looks like a tiny target.
Yeah, if you
so in a gun, the pin hits
like that,
the thing at the back, and that causes an explosion, and the bullet rocks
forward. Anything between the pin and the bullet.
I'm trying to listen to both of you right now.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, we weren't helping. I'll calm my skin down.
But anyway, the point is that everything in the universe was at some point this tiny thing, and at some point, about 13.8 billion years ago?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
I'm asking you, Gavin. It's about,
it could be 2 days, it could be...
I don't think it was two days ago. By conventional physics understanding, 13 point something years ago, I can't remember exactly how, 13.7, something like that, this thing exploded.
Yep.
And everything that exists at that point rushed out of it, and... Yep. So fast and with so much energy that it took 138,000 years for even light to exist.
Yes, mate, yeah.
Those were the building blocks of everything that we understand.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, that's a singularity. A singularity is a tiny thing. The Big Bang is the event of the singularity exploding and creating our universe.
Exactly, Rufus.
Big Bang Theory.
But don't you want to know how the singularity happened?
Well, one of the ideas is that black holes that you have heard of in the universe, anytime matter goes near them, they're pulled in, and the gravity inside a black hole is super, super dense. So when it goes in, it gets absolutely sort of crunched down tiny. The idea being that as these black holes receive more and expand more, all of these black holes basically link together to form one supermassive black hole, which creates singularities at the end. Once they've basically eaten the entire universe, a singularity is formed.
That's not how it works, because black holes emit matter. And
well, then explain.
Well, what happens? You know, if you if you've got a plug in your basin,
yeah,
and you turn the tap on,
yeah,
and the basin will take that amount of water down it quite nicely. But if you turn the tap up more, the basin becomes sort of overfilled. But it's still taking the water down, but your basin will fill up.
Yeah.
That's kind of how black holes work. They emit sometimes, because there's so much energy going in, they have to emit something to, and nobody really knows what that is. But, yeah, about the singularity of the universe... is there's a really crazy cat who I think has explained it completely marvellously. And he says, imagine it like a light bulb. And you're in a room, and there's a string of, like, Christmas lights horizontally above you in the middle of the room, and they're sort of swaying in the breeze, knocking against each other. And once one gets knocked, the light comes on.
Okay.
So you get a little bit of a spark of light, and then the light spreads out throughout the room.
Okay.
So the initial big bang is the light being turned on, your light bulb actually igniting.
Okay.
And everything that comes is a multiplication of that original thing. So you can look back in time and see where the big bang came from. And just
because it's a chain reaction of multiple universes being born one after the next.
Yeah, just like clinking baubles with lights.
Now, here's the only thing I would say about this. As
yep.
far as I'm aware, scientists think they know everything that happened from, I think it's something like 1/38th of a second after the Big Bang.
Yeah.
And there are some very, very smart people trying to work out, I mean, how you can even begin to consider or test or prove...
Madness. It's absolute madness.
...anything definitely. That happened before that. So, I'm entirely with you that as a theory may exist, but we don't know that for a fact.
Oh, no, it's definitely not fact. It's, at the moment, it's the most cutting-edge theory that these cats have come up with. I like to keep a breath so I can just phone you and let you know.
No, but this is amazing. So, what's this...
A little bit.
What's this theory called, then, this kind of chain reaction of universe births? Pulse theory.
Pulse theory, yeah.
All right. And what was it you were watching that explained all this to you?
No, I learn. I read books.
Very good. So what was the pulse theory book that you read?
It was a book by Roger Penrose. Penno. Yeah. He's your man, isn't he?
Penno.
Penno. Roger Penrose is a seriously smart man and one of the great science communicators.
Yeah, he makes it, well, I wouldn't say easy, but I think Stephen Hawking, there's a lot of people that, but the cognoscenti in the theoretical physics world see kind of like Stephen Hawking as being like the Robbie Williams that I take that. I didn't mean that to be harsh, man. But
I didn't think it was particularly harsh. I just find that analogy amusing for all the obvious reasons.
Yeah, man.
This is a bizarre conversation to be having, because the thing I was doing up until the point I had to leave to come to talk radio was trying to explain chaos theory to my 10-year-old son.
Wow,
chaos theory. Ah, that's really easy to explain.
Well, you'd think, right?
Yep.
he'd heard at school that a butterfly flapping its wings could create a tsunami in China, and he was terrified about what that meant and should we be killing all the butterflies.
Oh, no. The way to explain chaos theory is just to put a bowl of water in front of a child and say press in the middle and see what happens.
Yeah, the ripples ever outwards.
Yeah, and some go faster in some direction, some go,
Yeah, but that was it. So it was cause and effect, right? That one small thing here...
Yeah, that's what the universe is, I think. Well, what do I know? Yeah, it's probably
that's exactly it, right? Causality, cause and effect. That's everything traditional physics is based on.
Yeah, pluses
but then,
and minuses. Something will happen happen to some other cat.
But then you get down to the quantum level, and all of that goes out the window.
No, that's a really big misconception. People always think about quantum mechanics being really small, but it's not. It can explain really big things as well, like the cycles of planetary orbits and gravitational pull and all stuff like that. But also quantum mechanics can go so small, it can go nano. And the thing is, what they've discovered is the smaller you get with quantum mechanics, things, like you quite rightly said, go nuts. But if you expostulate them to the bigger scene, they go nuts as well. But they're somewhere in the middle that they kind of work. It's called string theory.
Yes, and then the issue becomes that these strings loop round on each other, and that is the power. Well, that the maths required to truly make the strings work is the thing that then leads to
dark matter
and dark energy, but also the idea of parallel universes and Everettian multi... Have you ever heard of a band called Eels?
Everything copies itself.
So the lead singer of Eels is a man called Mark Everett. His dad was a theoretical physicist. And it was his dad's idea that every time a choice is made in the universe...
Oh, don't start, Rufus. Seriously, man. Every time... If I hadn't said that, a different universe is made.
I'll tell you what. Let's all ponder that. Gavin. There's a choice I have to make right now, and that is to pause this conversation, don't go anywhere, while we take this advertising break.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound, in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Experience the unconventional.
Hello.
The unpredictable.
What I'm going to say sounds ridiculous.
And the completely unorthodox.
Don't you think that's a bit weird?
You never know just where the conversation will take you.
Is that Commando?
Late Night with Rufus Hound, in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We've had a brilliant text. Oh, Rufus Hound, in for Ian Lee, all that stuff at the top of the hour, blah, blah. You're already listening. I'm guessing you know. But a brilliant text from Mal in Belfast, who says, Rufus, the easiest way to explain the universe is that if it is infinite, then nothing can be added to it or indeed taken away. Therefore, it is a singularity. Or, sorry, therefore, there is singularity. That makes sense, right?
Completely.
So nothing can be added to it, nothing can be taken away. It's one thing. Yeah? All the matter that exists was once packed down, and so everything that exists in the universe, you can't add anything to it because the universe is all there is.
Right.
Yeah?
Yes.
Happy? All right, let's think of it a different way. If you got a glass of water and filled that glass of water right up to the brim, then everything in that glass is all the water in that glass. That's all the water that can be in that glass.
Yes.
You can't add any more to it.
But if you drank some, then you could. water evaporates, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah, okay, bad example.
Try again.
Okay, let's think. You get a box, right? A steel box.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And you fill it full of water, and then you weld the top shut.
Yeah.
Okay, the water inside that box can't evaporate, can't go anywhere. That's everything that there is.
Yeah, yeah.
If you somehow magically made that box bigger, there's nothing getting into the top of... There's nothing getting on the inside of it.
True.
Right? So then you keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. The amount of stuff inside the box doesn't change. The amount of water in that box or, you know, everything else, that stuff doesn't change. So it doesn't matter how big it gets, you can't add anything to it, you can't take anything away, it's welded shut.
Yeah.
That's like our universe. There is nothing that can get into the universe because the universe is all that there is.
Mm.
There's nothing outside of the universe.
Then if I believe you.
I'm not... I'm not trying to con you. Mal is probably explaining it better than I am. So... The universe is all there is. Nothing can be added to it or taken away because it's all there is. Right? But to suggest that one day gases exploded and we are where we are now cannot be explained properly. Did these forces or gases have a blueprint for life inbuilt? Were consciousness and emotions, feelings within that? Okay, it's taken a bit of a turn. I thought Mal was about to explain singularity more. I've got a feeling Mal is probably more of a creationist bent. How can there be a watch without a watchmaker? I would imagine would be a thought that Mal would want to share. And Mal, if you want to expand on this text, then the number to call is 0344 499 1000. Because I would take issue with this, but to suggest that one day gas has exploded and we are where we are now cannot be explained properly. It really rather can. So, frankly, Gavin's probably more and better placed to explain a lot of this than I am. Gavin, I think you probably know more about this than I do, frankly.
Yeah, I just, from what you were describing, I saw some pretty fundamental flaws about the idea of expansion and infinity.
Okay, well, let's have a crack at that then.
Let's have a go at infinity. Yeah, this is one that...
this should be quick.
Funnily enough. Right, what you can have is you can have a Cartesian number sequence, Oh, you like the old Cartesian pickle, don't you?
Keep it perfectly accessible for the non-physicist amongst us. So all a Cartesian
you can have numbers 1 to 10.
Numbers 1 to 10.
Yeah, going on, you can go 10, 11, 12, all up into as far as you can count.
Yeah, you would never, you could never stop counting.
Never
there would always be a number you could add.
And so that's what a lot of people think infinity is just counting until you can count no more.
You're right.
But the thing is, the way the universe meddles with us is between them numbers, there's differentiational equations and fractions. So you've got 1, 1.5, 1.752. So you've got another step of infinite numbers.
Yes, that on the one hand you can go infinitely big, on the other hand you can go infinitely small.
Yeah, precisely. So there's no such thing as infinity. You've only got a mode, or I'll go Latin on you, a modal of infinity.
Define modal?
Modal is one that you can set to the standards that you perceive to be, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You don't think there's anything in between. But if you go 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, they're all infinities within themselves.
Yeah, okay. Do you know, I'm so delighted that this is what we're doing with late night radio. Because if I was having trouble sleeping and thought, oh, I know, I'll just pop the radio on and that'll be soothing and relaxing. And it'll help me drop off.
I'm going to change your mind about the universe.
By this point, your brain should probably be dribbling out the side of your ear.
No, it all works.
It's infinitely big and infinitely small at the same time.
Like you said, you don't remember about the Terry's chocolate orange thing.
Well, I didn't remember the conversation.
The expansion of universe theory.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are saying that, oh, no, the universe is a hologram. We're all living in, like, some pony thing like the Matrix.
A simulation.
Yeah, we're all plugged into everything we see is a hologram.
So I'm gonna very quickly explain simulation theory to Hayley.
Go on, try.
You ready for this?
Go on,
Ailey.
Go on.
So, I'm trying to remember the name of the law. Can you remember the name of the law about the power of computers becoming doubly powerful every...
No, Rufus, I can't. I wish I could. No, yeah. Seriously, can't.
There's a theory somebody came up with that basically computing power doubles...
Yeah, mate. Oh, yeah, I know the one of which you speak, and it's... I don't know. I'll be square with you. I don't know.
But essentially, that because... computing power is always doubling. It's not incredibly hard to imagine. If you watch Avengers now, and you know you've got a giant monster flying through the air, and the Hulk's fighting him while explosions are going off. When I was born, the idea that you'd be able to have a computer powerful enough to generate those images was nonsense. You know, like that will never be possible. Yeah, computers. Can...
Rufus, can I just interrupt you seriously? Because this might put a different perspective on it. We're not inside some computer-driven matrix.
Well, hang on. By all means, Gavin, come back in with that, but at least let me explain what about first.
Sorry.
So the idea that computers could be powerful enough to generate those images, crazy.
Yeah.
And now we've got, you know, Oculus Rift and, you know, 3D worlds. So it's not a massive jump to imagine the idea that you could build a world. You know, have you ever played World of Warcraft Grand Theft Auto? So imagine a world in which you put on that the headset and the thing, and then you exist in this virtual world. Well, that's quite a small simulation that it's running.
Mm.
But if computers became so incredibly powerful in the far-flung future, they could run whole planets, right?
Yeah.
Like, what was it?
Second Life.
Second Life,
yes.
Exactly right. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, so the old Second Life thing. So, imagine this. We sit here and we think, gosh, what would life have been like in the court of Henry VIII? Well, we can track back from where we are now and say, well, we know that this building was knocked down, it was replaced by that building, it was replaced by that building. You could basically create a simulation where you mapped everything in the world now and then just took it back 1 second. Right? So if I throw a ball into the air and you walk in as the ball is in the air and I catch it, if you reverse the simulation, you would know from the fact that the ball was falling and at the speed it was falling that at some point it must have got to this height and it would have been thrown with that trajectory by my hand. You could map every atom, essentially, and the trajectory of those atoms and just keep rewinding, essentially.
Yeah.
So future civilizations, if they wanted to find out everything that had gone on up until the point that they existed, they could create a simulation and rewind time to look at everything that was happening in the universe.
Wow.
Incredible.
That's quite cool, isn't it?
Right. So, then, if they've got that much computing power to be able to do that, they would also have enough computing power to be able to then say, well, what would have happened if, the North hadn't won the American Civil War? We'll change one thing and now we'll run the simulation again and we'll see how the world would have been different, how things would have been different on Earth. They could change tiny things and run a whole batch of different kind of versions to see how the thing goes, right?
Yeah.
So then the next stage is, if they could do that once with that amount of computing power, they could be trying all sorts of things to see what the outcome of different parameters are. Now, at the point that they can do that, the things in the simulation need to think that the way in which they are behaving is not part of a simulation, otherwise the simulation's broken.
Bit like Groundhog Day, isn't it?
More like the Matrix.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
That they're all in the Matrix.
Yeah, man.
And they don't know that they're in the Matrix, and then, you know, it's like, oh, there's a whole world out there.
Yeah, yeah.
If future civilizations could run these simulations, I'm really trying to get this
right.
You've
even lost yourself now.
Yeah, no, no. If future civilizations could run these simulations and the things inside the simulation didn't know that they were part of a simulation...
How many times can you say simulation in one sentence?
This many. The people in the simulation didn't know they were part of a simulation, otherwise the simulation doesn't work, it doesn't tell you the thing that you're trying to find out, then how would we know that we are not part of the simulation?
Oh, and, really easy.
Well, you say it's really easy, but there is some very smart people who have said, given the fact that they could run these simulations 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 times, and the people inside the simulation wouldn't know they were part of a simulation, the odds are that we are actually... The odds of us being the one reality that ever occurred are way less than the odds of being part of a simulation.
You've got to turn your scope round. Rather than looking at the product, you've got to look about where it came from.
Hang on. Yeah, go on. Explain that.
Yeah, rather than seeing the outcome of the event, you've got to see what triggered it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So you've got a singularity.
No, no. So this simulation theory absolutely supposes that there was a, you know, there was a Big Bang, that there was a reality, yeah. There was a real thing that happened. It's only that the odds are that we are part of a simulation, because if at some future point a simulation can be created, it's likely that that simulation was run many, many times, and therefore it's more likely that we're part of a simulation than we are the one reality that is occurring. Like the real thing that actually happened.
That reality.
Say again?
It depends whether or not we created that reality. We could be in control of it. We don't even know it yet because it's so far in front of us.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Wow.
There we go.
Welcome. Welcome, friends, to Talk Radio. Yeah. Gavin, we've had a lot of people phoning in.
Are they going to shout at me, man?
No, I don't know that they are. Do you want to stay on the line, Gavin? Because I may defer to your greater knowledge.
No, honestly, mate, I don't know anything. yeah, he says trying to get out of it.
You're just making it all up.
Then, the one thing I would like to thank is a man called Roger who has tweeted in. I can't see your username, Roger, so forgive me for that. But it's Moore's Law. So Moore's Law is the law that says computing power doubles...
Yeah, I'll take that because I couldn't remember. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I'll take that.
Doubles exponentially or whatever.
Yeah.
So Neil deGrasse Tyson is one of the kind of popular figures in science communication, internationally very well regarded scientist.
And he's talking to you now.
We join him now live. No, he's if you Google Neil deGrasse Tyson, he's one of like America's big science communicators. He gets booked on talk shows like once a week, pretty much. So yeah. If you want to find out more about this stuff, check out Neil deGrasse Tyson explaining it. And in fact, I've got a feeling that some of this is covered in Cosmos, which was Carl Sagan, originally
Carl
in
Sagan,
the 70s.
He was a big advocate of bulk theory.
Amongst other things.
Yeah,
but he was also a phenomenal science communicator. Yeah, but he made a series called Cosmos, and Neil deGrasse Tyson has just updated that whole Cosmos thing. If you have Netflix, you can watch Neil deGrasse Tyson explain multiverse theory.
Final records. I ain't got no Netflix.
Well, I apologise for that. Borrow somebody's login and watch Cosmos. And that goes for anybody listening. If your brain is fried or at least turned on by some of this stuff, check out Neil deGrasse Tyson. But Gavin, it's been an absolute joy speaking to you.
You too, my friend.
Take care.
I'll see you next time. Ta-da.
Next time. Jonathan's in Tyneside. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello.
You all right?
Yeah.
Are you still on half term?
No.
You back at school?
Yeah, just today.
All right. How was your half term?
It was good.
What'd you get up to?
Not much.
So productive then?
Oh yeah, of course. Very productive.
for those who don't know, Jonathan, you're at boarding school, aren't you?
No.
Oh, you're not?
No.
Oh, I thought you were at posh boarding school, Jonathan.
No, for this.
Oh, mate. Have we spoken before?
I don't know.
Oh, well. I thought you were somebody that you're not, Jonathan. I'm going to have to take stock of this. Maybe this is a ripple in the simulation.
Maybe. You never know.
I'm thinking of Yayan, who was on the line a second ago and has hung up, probably because his dorm master walked past his door and he panicked. I tell you what, Jonathan, hold fire. Let's take some adverts and we'll speak to you when we come back. All right by you?
Okay.
All right, speak to you in a second.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We were talking to young Jonathan from Tyne and Wear. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello.
So, how old are you, Jonathan? You sound like a young man.
13.
13. Whole life ahead of you. Why are you awake? You're a teenager. You should be getting something like 11 hours sleep in order to perform at your absolute peak.
Well, I don't need... I can't think. Anyway, point is, right, yeah. The reason why I called is because you were talking about all these things.
I was.
And it was very irritating because I wanted to say stuff and I couldn't.
Well, I'm sorry to have kept you, Jonathan. You've got stuff to say. This is very much what the late night alternative is about, that we talk about the things you want to talk about, and you're being kept from that opportunity.
Yeah, because you were talking about it, and it was frustrating because, well, I like all of this stuff about all the things, and yeah, so I had a lot because the thing is right.
Oh, I see. You were annoyed that you weren't part of that conversation.
Yes.
Right, well, Jonathan, this is our chance, mate. So, let's crack on. What part of it was the first thing you wanted to get off your chest?
Well, okay, the first one. The thing with the black holes, the thing that gets out is... It's Hawking radiation.
It's Hawking radiation.
Okay, that was the first thing that annoyed me. And then the other one was... But yeah, with the infinity stuff. So, like, I can't remember exactly what was being said, but, like, my point was, there's, like, infinities.
Infinities, like, plural?
You can have, like, bigger ones and smaller ones.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like, 0 and 1, like, all the numbers between that are infinity, but then 2 and 4.
Yeah.
It's, like, 3 times as big, but it's still... Infinity.
It's still infinitely small.
No, infinite. Like, it's infinite still, because if you go from 0 to 1, like, what's the first number after 0?
Yeah, exactly.
It would be like infinite zeros and then a 1.
Yeah. Well, there would be no one. You would just keep going to zero until time itself ran out, and even then you've only run out of time because there was still a one that could have gone after that.
Yeah. So then the infinity, as you say, it would be three times bigger, but it's still infinity for, like, if it was zero.
Yes. Yes, that's absolutely right. It's. Do you know the theory of infinite possibility?
No.
So, if time is infinite, then in infinite time, all things must occur. This is like infinite number of monkeys thing. That if you had an infinite number of monkeys, eventually one of them will write the complete works of Shakespeare. But it's not only that one of them would write the complete works of Shakespeare, it's that an infinite number of monkeys would write the complete works of Shakespeare an infinite number of times.
Yeah. Also with the simulation thing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you got to it in the end, but you would, like, obviously the first reality, like the first, like, Big Bang would be simulated, but then once someone made a simulation, that would be real, and once someone made a simulation in that, in the simulation, they would make a simulation eventually.
Yes, so we could be a simulation within a simulation within a simulation within a simulation within, and so on and so on, until you, I guess, entirely what we were speaking about, between the numbers 0 and 1, there are an infinite number of simulations inside a simulation.
Yeah.
Oh, Jonathan, mate, you just absolutely smashed my brain to bits. God love you for that.
And also with, like, the way the computers are getting more powerful and more powerful.
Yeah.
They're obviously getting, like, cheaper compared to power. So, like, a few years ago, like, just, like, an average phone, like, the technology would be, like, millions of pounds.
Yeah.
But now, you know, you can probably buy them used, 40 quid off eBay kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the chances of us being, like, in some 10-year-old's computer is quite high as well.
That we're not even one of the good simulations.
Yeah.
We're a subroutine running on the app of a kid is playing Candy Crush a million years from now, and that's all we are.
I know. It's pretty crazy.
That is pretty crazy. Jonathan, thank you so much for sticking around to share that with us. Please.
That... Obviously, there's, like, loads of different theories for how everything works.
Yeah.
But then there's a theory that there's a really simple rule between two things.
Yeah.
So, like, obviously we can't see the particle or whatever it is yet, but it would just be really simple. Like, when there's two of these, this happens, and it's just, they're so small, and they just all connect together differently.
Yeah.
So it's a really basic rule, but it's just there's so many of them.
Yeah.
That what they end up creating is huge.
Yeah. So do you know of a book called Flat World?
No.
So when people start talking about dimensions, the big problem is, so string theory. I wish our friend was back on the line. But, Jonathan, you probably know this better than I do already. But within string theory, we experience four dimensions as human beings.
Yeah.
So you can go forwards and backwards.
Yeah.
You can go left and right. You can go up and down. All of your movement can be described as being on those three axes.
Yeah.
But we also experience time.
Yeah.
So those are our four dimensions. What string theory suggests is there might be many, many more dimensions, but we just can't, we can't perceive them. And this book, Flat World...
Yeah, so in the way that you might have, like, a 2D world...
Exactly that. So Flat World was...
2D world.
Flat World was exactly that. That these creatures live on this two-dimensional plane where they've got forward, backwards, left and right, but no up and down. What does their world look like? And if you said there is an up and down, how could their brains possibly comprehend that?
Yeah.
In the same way that if we've got multiple dimensions in the universe, but we can only experience four of them, how can we perceive of how these other dimensions work? And Einstein, when he had the special theory of relativity, then had the general theory of relativity, Hayley at this point is keep nodding and smiling.
I'm really trying.
His third feat was to do a thing called U theory, which was the universal theory, which matched special relativity and general relativity. You don't need to know necessarily what those theories are, but it was his great upset in his life was that having come up with these theories that completely changed how people understood the universe and how the universe works, he couldn't find one theory that married those two theories, and it's called U theory. And basically, it's exactly what Jonathan's talking about. It should be that there is an elegant description of how everything in the universe exists, but we can't get to it. And I imagine, Jonathan, what you're trying to express is that that may be because we're incapable of perceiving the particles or the dimensions that actually make sense of everything and make it incredibly straightforward and easy to understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was thinking was, if you have the whole of the observable universe, it could just be like a little puddle in an even bigger world that we can't see. And yeah. The same way, like a fish might live in a lake, and that's its whole world.
Yeah. It's one of the things in Cosmos. Neil deGrasse Tyson explains there could be a foam of universes, that we may just be one bubble within within this vast foam, but that we have no way of perceiving anything outside of the tiny bubble that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Yes!
I forgot what I was going to say.
Now, Jonathan, let me ask you this question. Knowing all of this stuff, does it make you feel tiny and insignificant in a bad way, or tiny and insignificant in a good way?
I don't know.
That is the best possible answer. How can you know? I mean, how is it meant to make you feel? Are we meant to feel anything at all? Is this even real? You can just totally undo yourself. But the reason I personally find all of this fascinating is that I would say I'm an atheist, but for the fact that I have to accept on science you can't disprove the existence of God. Therefore, because, God could be anything, so you can't disprove that God exists. But it's just that all of the evidence seems to imply that there isn't one. So I'm as close to being an atheist as one can be, but in respect to science, I have to say I'm just heavily agnostic.
Right. Well, it's also you can have, obviously, God could be real, but that would be, with science, it would be, just ignored because it's a more complicated way of explaining the same thing, in the way that if we thought of that theory where it was just really basic theory of something really small that we can't see but it gets bigger because of the way it reacts, it would be like all of our theories would be completely invalid and that would be the only one we need because that was everything.
Yeah, and it's simple, right? Because if you just say, oh, God did it, then you don't have to worry about how complicated everything is.
Yeah.
Because you just go, oh, it's just that one thing. There's a fascinating thing I was reading earlier tonight from, I really don't want this to become a Brexit phone-in, so, if you want to phone up and talk about Brexit, frankly, it's a late-night alternative. There's nothing I can really do to stop you, but let's not bother. However, the fascinating thing I was reading tonight was that with the world being as complicated as it is, and the world is an incredibly complicated place, we have essentially evolved to deal with each other in quite small tribes, to feel about the world as quite a small thing. That's what our brains are geared up to do. As the world has got more and more and more complicated, there is a reaction against how complicated the world is, because people feel a bit lost in it and anxious about it, and they want to hark back to when the world was simpler. Now, when was the world simpler for everyone? When you were a kid, right? Because, your parameters were much smaller. So people have this view of the past of being simpler. If we could get back to some theoretical time that when the world was less complicated, I would feel happier. So this Brexit thing of we need to leave the EU is really more about people rejecting how complicated the world is. We don't need these rules. We don't need all of this. We don't need these anonymous, faceless Eurocrats in Brussels telling us what we can and can't do. It's so complicated. All that stuff is just so complicated. We want to just go back to a world where we make a thing and sell a thing. It's simple. We need to thin it all out. We need to lose the red tape. That's the thing that people are really harking back to. So when you hear all these phone-ins that are all about Brexit, and I would imagine talk radio is not short of those, you actually say to those people, so name a piece of EU legislation that you don't like and the reason that you chose to leave. What was the specific thing that made you want to call it a day? They can't name one, because it's not about the detail. It's about the exact opposite. It's about rejecting detail. It's about rejecting fuss and trying to get back to something simpler. And I think there's a big crossover with that and the God thing, which is once you start thinking about how complicated all of the actual creation of the universe is, it's so terrifying and so vast and so unknowable or seemingly unknowable that you go, please let me just reject all of that and get back to something simple that I can cling on to, which is God did it. Oh, phew. Oh, this will all work out in the end. Oh, that's fine. Someone's going to take care of all this. Great, I don't have to think about it. We're wired up to want things to be simple, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, in fairness to the people who do think that, like, the whole point of science is to ultimately have one simple rule, like I said. So
yes!
We are trying to get to simplicity, but...
Yeah, we're just taking the scenic route to trying to get to, yeah. Let's have one simple rule.
It's kind of like in maths, how you could have, for like, if you have like a linear sequence, or like 1, 2, 3, you could have just n, that could be the whole thing, or you could overcomplicate it, and you could have like n plus n minus n, but it would be the exact same thing.
Yeah. Yes, you could. Oh, Jonathan. Why aren't you just phoning in, right? At 10, any time you hear I'm on the radio, Jonathan, I need you on the line at 10, and we will ride this thing all the way through till 1 a.m. It's smashing. So, Jonathan, talk to me about school.
What about it?
Well, because, I mean, you're like some kind of crazy genius.
Well... Well, to be honest, I think most of the more, like, complete overcomplicated things is more from, like, just YouTube. Just find it interesting just to sit down and watch videos of it.
And that's what you do with your time, is it? Videos about theoretical physics?
That used to be, like, my main thing, and it's still, like, when I get the chance, that is, like, if that's all that there is to do, that's what I do. But I like riding my bike a lot as well, so that's, like, my main thing. But,
Jonathan, you are smashing life.
Hmm?
I want you to know that. Go out into the world knowing that you are winning, mate. Well, look, I cannot tell you how much I have enjoyed this conversation, Jonathan. So,
yes.
Thank you for phoning. Anytime I'm back on, phone again. And I don't know if... Do you regularly speak to Ian?
I called in... The first time, like, a couple of days ago.
Mate, you're ahead of the game. So always know that picking up the phone and calling 03444991000 is something you should be considering doing.
All
and
right.
Imparting your wisdom to the listening nation.
Oh, actually, can I just say something that's quite weird here, right?
Yeah.
In school, for sciences, last year anyway,
yeah.
My most favourite was physics... then biology, then chemistry.
Right.
But according to my levels, it was, like, opposite. Like, I was best at chemistry, then biology, and then physics.
Well, and what used to be taught at schools was those three as three quite kind of separate scientific ideas. And in the last 20 years, the overlap between the things that people are really thinking about in physics, certainly... like quantum and things working at a very small level, has had such an enormous impact on chemistry that now really chemistry is seen almost as a branch of physics. I know there are a lot of chemists who would hate that because it's a specialism in and of its own right, but actually what's going on at the surface there is now viewed as being, you know, an extension of physics.
Also with all, like, how accessible the internet is and all the information on the internet, the difference between... like, the highest set and the one below it is getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Most of the people in the top one are the people who just are constantly watching the videos and that.
Are basically teaching themselves and then turning up at school by way of a demonstration of how much they know.
Yeah. And also, pretty much everything I know about... well, everything I knew about science until year 7 was just from the internet, because to be honest, in primary school, I think it was we didn't really do science, you know.
Mm.
We had the occasional lesson, like, I think, I remember we did a lesson on sound. It was just really dull because I would watch all the videos, so I knew so much more than that.
Yeah, there was so I used to work at the Science Museum teaching kids science, or at least explaining science to kids. Teaching is probably a bit of a the Science Museum in London, Science Museum, as it's known. Not to show off, Jonathan, but you know. I worked for a bloke there called Rob Edwards, who said that science is taught totally backwards, which is you get to school and they say, right, this is how waves work, or this is, you know, a very small thing. And then eventually, if you stick with science for 20 years, you eventually get into the really interesting stuff about the birth of the universe. And Rob's point, and I cling to this day, is that what we should be doing is teaching Big Bang Theory to five-year-olds of, like, this is the birth of the universe, because it's so, like, trippy and mind-expanding that's the thing that kids go, oh, my God, tell me more about that thing, and then you can break it down into, you know, new layers. But if you start with the boring stuff, it's just a boring subject. If you start with the really exciting, mind-blowing stuff, then it becomes a lot less so.
I think they try to simplify things a bit too often, actually, because, you know, you're always taught... I mean, this one is probably one of the less important ones, but you're always taught that there's three states of matter, but there's four because plasma as well.
Do you know, we were talking about this before we came on air. Jonathan, this is like... Now this is freaky. we were literally having this conversation because I said, when I worked at the Science Museum, if you do your Key Stage 2 tests and they ask you how many states of matter are there, if you answer anything other than three, you're told you're wrong. But there's four, there's plasma, and I think there may even be one other posited that's sort of they're still trying to define. But there are all these states of matter.
This is the other thing. This is the first reason why I wanted to call in. You were saying that, like, if you had, like, a steel box and you filled it with water and then the box was expanding or something.
Yeah.
There's a theory that atoms, well, not atoms, but matter is added into the universe.
So that it's not a sealed system.
Yeah, you do get more atoms in the universe to make up for the expansion, but even then, you've still got, what's it called, the red thing, because of the expansion, so everything gets redder. As if it was accelerating away from you.
Yeah, yeah. I can't think of the technical term. I don't really understand it.
But the Doppler effect, but for light.
Yeah, yeah. there's and is I the other thing that's pushing the expansion further may be dark energy. Is that right?
Well, actually, what I thought is that if the universe is expanding into nothing, then there's nothing stopping it from expanding.
Yes.
So all you need is, even if the Big Bang itself was only an extremely tiny amount of force, there's nothing to stop it expanding except itself, so...
Because it's sort of a frictionless system.
Yeah. So the way for it to really stop expanding would be for all the matter to kind of disappear, which is impossible, or if gravity became so strong inside the universe...
That it pulled back together again.
Yeah, like kind of what you were saying with the supermassive black hole, slowly collecting everything.
Yeah,
together.
And forming singularities. Because when you do chemistry at school, right, I'm looking at Hayley again, you know the model of atoms?
Yes.
Where you've got the proton in the middle and electrons whizzing around the outside. So there's gaps between the proton and where the electron is.
Yeah, I always thought that. Like, what is there?
Right. Yeah. So the point is that in a singularity... If you the gaps between the protons and the electrons compared with the size of the protons and the electrons means that you can shrink the entire universe down to something smaller than a football, not because you'd think, well, hang on, I can't take these two rocks and squish them together, but the actual gaps between the electrons and the protons are where that's where you're squeezing. It's those gaps that disappear.
Right.
Yes, I think. When you get to that, it gets really weird. Like, it's not confusing, but it's just really weird to think about, because even, like, a sponge, it's difficult to squish a sponge, like, to... I mean, you can squish a sponge to pretty small.
Yeah.
But, you like, there's still, like, if you have a huge machine, you can still compress it more. And same with, like, water. You'd think you can't compress that, but you can, not by a lot, but a very small amount.
There was a thing that was in the news this week. Oh, look, Jonathan, we've got to take some adverts, right? Don't go anywhere. We'll come back and talk some more. It may be Hayley who speaks to you, because I've got to work out whether or not I can squeeze my bladder empty in the time it takes these adverts to roll.
Late night conversation, wealth losing sleep over. Late night with Rufus Hound, in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
You're listening to Talk Radio, where we're basically talking to a 13-year-old boy who is smarter than anybody else I've ever spoken to, possibly in my life. His name is Jonathan, he's in Tyneside. You're still there, Jonathan?
Yeah. While you've been gone, I came up with... Oh, I forgot it now. Anyway, what I was going to say was I had this theory once, and then not that long later, I searched it, and someone had thought of the same theory.
Can you remember what it was?
It was with, you know, like how obviously life, when life's created...
Yeah.
Like the very first life form.
Yeah.
It would be the conditions required for life to be created are so precise that if there was aliens, then they would be extremely similar, because for it to be created in the first place, it has to be so similar. The way evolution works, it would evolve to be really similar because it would have to survive in similar conditions.
Yeah. However, right?
Although there's... you have the reptiles and you have the dinosaurs, so... It would be either a sea animal, reptile, mammal, or the other one.
Yeah. Yeah. However, the way that biology, or at least evolution, works is that each life form that is best suited to survive in the conditions in which it finds itself flourishes, and the generation that comes after it, that it reproduces, is better equipped to deal with that environment. So depending on what physical properties the environment you're in have,
but
informs how you would grow. So
there's only so many environments that they can be in, though.
Yeah, so, but look, I agree that that is... that there are only so many environments that life as we understand it can flourish... But what if there's a different way of life coming to be based on different environments and different environmental conditions?
Yeah, the other way is you can actually get it, because obviously they can be made out of different materials. So, you know how obviously everyone drinks water and we have oxygen?
Yeah.
Well, there could be like another chemical thing where instead of carbon as being our main, like, what
because
we're mainly
we're a
built
carbon-based
of,
life form.
It could be like a different base.
Yeah, exactly.
So that would be the other thing. And then, obviously, it would be able to survive above different temperatures. Since we've got water in our bodies, then we can't actually survive above 100 degrees.
Yeah.
Unless the pressure is... We can't actually boil because of the pressure. So there's only a few... There's, like, an animal that lives underwater, deep underwater, and it can live above 100 degrees, but only because the pressure of the water is so great.
Is it the sea pig?
I have no idea what it is.
Because there's, or it might be the blobfish. Basically, there's
blobfish.
A blobfish.
There's something called a blobfish.
A blobfish.
Brilliant.
Because it exists at very low levels of the ocean, where the pressure is so enormous that the form that this thing has, it's basically squeezed on all sides, so it looks like a fish. But when you bring it up to normal atmosphere, above sea level, it just turns into a blob. So any of these things that have been found, they go, oh, it's just like this blobby thing. But when you see it in its natural habitat with super high pressure on it, it looks like an entirely a different animal altogether.
Yeah. Also, you know how, obviously, I'm sure you know how gravity, it's not meant to be a force, but it's an effect of the curvature of the space-time continuum. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking, if time wasn't infinite and it stopped, then there wouldn't... Like, gravity would just stop, so... And then it would also mean the way mass works.
Yeah.
Because the mass bends it.
yeah.
then maybe maths would just kind of not exist or something.
Well, yeah. Because, well, the maths just describes a thing that exists.
Yeah.
But when we think of weight, that's mass times force. So at the point that that gravity didn't exist, nothing would have any weight. But the mass would still be there, right?
Yeah, but the mass, it would be almost irrelevant. Because obviously you could still have magnetism, but then we can't experiment with areas where gravity doesn't exist at all.
No.
So do we know if mass would really have any effect? Like, would maybe if there wasn't any time, then everything would happen infinitely fast because there's no mass to stop it from accelerating.
Oh, Jonathan, these are sensational questions. Well, look, I'm going to go to a different caller now because I basically, on behalf of your parents, need you to go to sleep. This is I'm an irresponsible adult if I keep you up past midnight when you should definitely be in bed. But honestly, mate, thank you so much for your call.
Right.
Jonathan there. I'm clapping him out. It's the first time I've ever clapped a caller out.
Oh.
But he definitely gets my round of applause. Well, what a show this is shaping up to be. Hopefully you've stuck with us. Hopefully you've found some maybe some interesting new ideas. Let's find out with Niall, who's our next caller. Hello, Niall.
You're all right, Rufus.
I'm bobbing along, mate. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I was a big show of you on Celebrity Juice. I think it's gone downhill since you've left, personally.
Please write to ITV and tell them.
I'll be sure to do that. Yeah. I was wondering whether you've ever heard of DMT.
I've heard of the letters DMT.
In that order?
Yeah. I'm trying to... go on. In which specific context?
Basically, it's a chemical that grows in the pineal gland of the brain.
Oh, yeah.
Of us.
Yeah, it's DMT is also part of the cannabis plant.
I'm not too sure about that.
I'm going to Google it. You keep talking.
Yeah, that's the first entry that comes up in Wikipedia. To be fair,
yeah,
but it is in every ecosystem in the world, and it's the most potent psychedelic drug known to man. It's in plants, grasses. It's everywhere. It's the craziest banned substance in the world because it's inside of us. You know.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the arguments that people who are advocates for marijuana put forward all the time, is the active ingredients in marijuana are things that our bodies have systems to deal with, and therefore it's a different thing to, like, alcohol, which we have evolved to cope with. This is instead putting something into ourselves that our body naturally produces, but just in higher qualities. Higher quantities, sorry.
Yeah, but... The point I'm trying to make is when extracted, this can be used as like a psychedelic drug.
Yeah.
And basically, it can take. You know, we are an experience obsessed society, aren't we? Everyone wants to. You know, not everyone, but most people want to travel the world. They've got a bucket list. They want to jump out of planes, bungee jump, etc., etc. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
And basically, from what I've researched and what I've looked up, you know, people take this and it takes them away from the consciousness and they're able to communicate with other beings, if that makes sense, from other dimensions.
Or at least that is their experience of it.
Yeah. We don't know whether this is actually happening or whether it's not. I mean, the universe is infinite, so in an infinite universe, anything's possible, right?
So they say. I mean, that's almost exactly what we've been talking about with Jonathan.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely alien to us. It's completely alien to us. Like, it is, isn't it? Like, it's, you know, we don't know nothing about it, really.
Well, look.
We just know what we get told.
We have machinery in us that processes the world around us, and we call that perception.
Yeah.
Right? So that machinery is running it's basically a circuit, right? Our brains have tiny electrical impulses firing across them. It works exactly the same way as a microchip. So in the same way that you can tell a microchip to process information to bring about one outcome or a different outcome, exactly like a computer, if you run different operating systems, you can process the electrical signals different ways. All of the stuff that the model I can accept when it comes to all of these drugs is essentially you're running a different operating system on your brain. So your perception is now processing the world around you in an entirely different way. The idea that is actually reaching out across the universe and you're speaking to alien races feels incredibly unlikely to me.
It does, yeah. I agree. It is incredibly unlikely, but it's not impossible.
In terms of a definition of an infinite universe where nothing technically is impossible, you are absolutely right. But in terms of actually being able to demonstrate or prove that there is some kind of link, it feels very unlikely. Although, with quantum entanglement, who knows?
I mean, the thing that fascinates me about it is when I've heard people's stories of it, like from taking it and their trips on it, they say, you know, it takes them to another world where, you know, they speak to human beings, not human beings, they speak to higher beings sort of things, you know, that are just unbelievably wild.
But look, I think we would all agree that we have probably all had experiences, either through booze or just being in love with people, where your body is processing a bunch of chemicals, and so what you perceive around you changes. But that would be fair. Listen, dude, let's take some adverts. Stay on the line. We'll talk to you when we come back. All right, Noel?
Yeah, thank you.
Cool, man.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Stimulating nightly emissions guaranteed to open your eyes and your mind.
I've been having some weird experiences for the past several years.
Speech Radio with a difference.
I was just trying to generate a bit of content.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Well, this is shaping up to be my favourite show ever. And it's lovely to share it with Hayley.
I'm enthralled.
This is the first time we've ever worked together. This is not how this normally goes,
no.
Hayley. You're a charm.
Oh, that's kind.
I've been quickly checking Twitter while we were taking those commercial messages. And Jonathan, if you are still listening, and like I say, please go to sleep. There is some amazing love pouring in for young Jonathan. Let's have a look here. Budgie says, absolutely loving all this science chat on Talk Radio. Fabulous and fascinating stuff. Loving this call with Jonathan. What a smart lad. He has my mind blown. I'll be looking up the Flat World book for sure. That was from Lou. Lou Magill or Magill? I don't know. Is that a soft G or a hard G? Darius in Dartford says, I think I'm starting to get it. Just one thing. If we're all in a simulation, who created ghosts and zombies and Frankenstein? there was one. I'm trying to find it here where it was somebody saying they would hate to be Jonathan's science teacher. Where's that? Yes. Oh, it's Lou again. I'm gobsmacked at how such a young lad knows so much. I'd hate to be his science teacher, so he'd run rings around them. He's so confident too when he gets into his stride. Knowledge is power. Knowledge is that thing that gives you confidence. Now, not to talk down Niall for any moment at all, but Niall, I just want to make a slight separation here between the conversations we have been having previously and the conversations we are enjoying now. The conversations previously have sort of real science backing and maths and research behind them. We're now in a more fringe area of science or fringe area of thought. But very happy to have this conversation now. We're talking about DMT and the fact that people who take this drug find themselves talking to creatures, you know, from other worlds and that kind of thing. Is that right, Niall?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Higher beings, so to speak, whether it's aliens, whether it's gods, you know, stuff like that. I just find it fascinating that, you know, if our brains can do this through our consciousness, you know, what can we achieve? If there's a chemical or a drug or whatever we want to name it that can help us see things that we couldn't before.
Yeah. But Niall, can you?
Extremely fascinating.
But you have to accept as well that there is absolutely no proof that that is actually what's happening. That's what people who have used that substance perceive, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what's happening.
No, it doesn't. But it opens a world, doesn't it? It opens a world of possibilities.
Well, no, it changes. It changes how your brain is perceiving things. You're saying it changes things, but it may not be changing anything at all. It's exactly the same as some bloke in a chip shop who's had too much beer, who turns to the bloke behind him and says, "Would you say to me?" It's his brain is perceiving some terrible thing has been said when nothing might have been said at all. That's how, you know, that's how chemicals affect our perception and our brains.
That is how a woman's mind works, trust me, because we overthink everything and we make something massive when it's tiny.
Right.
That is my life.
Welcome. The macro from the micro.
Yes.
Okay.
Welcome to my head. It is.
You're now taking the physics chat down a kind of gendered brain chemistry route.
Yeah. Type thing. Yeah.
Okay.
But if we could do this, if this is happening within our brains, you know, what else are we capable of? You know, it can't just be the chemical making us do this, you know.
No, but it can be. I think that's my point, Niall, is it totally can be.
Could there not be, like, something else to it, you think?
Oh, no, there could be, but there's just no proof that that is what's happening. And the likelihood is simply that our brains are just processing the world around us in a different way and making us feel those things are happening when, in truth, that it's funny enough, ties back to exactly the conversation we're having at the start of the show, which is when Hayley watches the Winter Olympics, she feels cold.
Yes.
It's just a thing your brain is doing that actually you're no colder than you were before you started watching the Winter Olympics. It's just what your brain is telling you.
Oh, I am actually colder, but I've made myself feel that.
So here would be the test, right? And this is what we should do now, but I don't think we have the necessary apparatus. We should get a thermometer, right?
Yeah.
And then take your temperature and then put the Winter Olympics on and see whether your temperature changes.
That would be an awesome experiment.
That would be an awesome experiment.
Sam,
can we get a thermometer from anywhere?
He's looking. He's actually looking in the control room.
Office.
There might be... Oh, a first aid kit. Right,
yes.
So that's what we're going to do.
In the bottom cupboard in the kitchen, the first aid kit.
There we go. We're giving away official Talk Radio secrets now. If you ever break into these offices and you're looking for a first aid kit, that's where it is. Niall, look, I think what is certainly true is the fact that our brains are capable of not necessarily always performing their task in the same way every time is totally worthy of consideration. The way that we can influence that is always very interesting. And to a degree, actually, the idea of, don't get me wrong, there are people who have genuine illnesses and, you know, the hormones and all sorts of things in the brain can make you feel very sad. But sometimes it is just a case of changing your attitude towards something means that you perceive the world in a different way. Certainly the people I like know who, as a personal example, as a cliche, the cliche is a Tory is just a liberal who's been mugged.
Yeah.
Right? That once you've been mugged, you start seeing the world like, oh, they're all out to get me, it's all terrible. And so you begin to see the world as being a terrible place and the people within that world as terrible people. Whereas when you walk around, everything's fine and lovely. You think the world is full of infinite possibility. It's the same with privilege. If you, arguably, the fact that so many of our politicians are privately educated means that their perception of how the world works is vastly different from the experience of, you know, the vast majority of our citizens.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's the thing to dwell on is the fact that your brain can tell you about the state of the world and that your brain can be changed and the message that you receive about the state of the world can be changed by your brain. Ask some questions about the difference between reality and perception.
I know there's no proof, but is there anything that proves that it isn't real?
That what isn't real?
You know, these meetings and these experiences that people have had. Is there any proof that this isn't real? Because I haven't really checked whether there's proof debunking it, sort of thing.
Sure,
if that makes any sense. You know, what I find fascinating is if you can, you know, somehow consciously talk to another being from another planet.
Yeah,
that's really cool to me. That's really, really interesting to me. That fascinates me. You know, it gets me going. It's sexy. It's sexy. It's exciting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, it kind of blows my mind a bit. You know, I'm not saying go out and buy.
And as a broadcaster, we would actively warn anybody. Putting any substance in yourself to try and shift your brain chemistry is not okay. Don't do it.
I'm not trying to...
We are not advocating this. It is an interesting topic of discussion.
I just want to say I'm not promoting this. I'm not saying go out and buy it. I'm not saying, you know... I wouldn't try it myself either. But I'm just saying, like, you know, it's very, very, you know, fascinating because it just... What if it does open up a world to other dimensions? What if it does? What if that slim chance that it does open up?
Yeah.
You know.
But honestly, Niall, the question what if is basically a definition of a sense of wonder. You know?
It is. Yeah,
early man would have thought, what if I climb over that mountain? What's on the other side? And, you know, explorers throughout history have thought, what if I go over there? What's over there? What's that? You know, we are desperate for answers. That is a sense of wonder. However, you say, has it been disproved? The burden really is to prove that that is what's happening more than, you know, for somebody else to prove that it isn't happening. Because if I say to you, you know, smash your head repeatedly in a car door and you'll grow an extra leg, you know... The likelihood is that that isn't going to happen. But if I say to you, well, you know, you haven't done it yet, so how do you know? It hasn't been disproved. We can work on some pretty stiff likelihoods, can't we?
Yeah, we can, yeah.
And anyway, look, there's a whole thing called neuroplasticity, which is how the brain changes or different parts of the brain shift their function. People who have brain damage and are told, you know, oh, you'll lose memory or you'll lose sight or you'll lose the ability to taste.
Yeah.
Often bits of the brain that are responsible for those tasks, if they're damaged, other bits of the brain step in and go, all right, well, we'll process that now. That's neuroplasticity. So the fact that our brains can shift in their function is... totally fascinating.
You know way too much more about the brain than I do.
Well, honestly, it's like Jonathan. Once you get interested in something, we live in the information age. That all I would advise anybody is look for the scientists, look for the people who have long track records of really being on top of this, because the world is full of what is termed woo-woo. People using, you know, some element of science to sell you a bag of bad goods. Bad goods? That's an oxymoron. To sell you a lie. So
I mean,
some people will use a small element of science to tell you a lie. The people you need to look out for and be interested in are the people who can back up all of these ideas with cold, hard facts. And look... we were talking about, you know, simulations and simulations within simulations. Those things are all theories. So nobody is saying that is what is happening. Yeah, the Matrix theory, exactly. Those are all just theories. There is no evidence to support those things. But there are some interesting ideas at play, and really it's the ideas that are, as you say, trippy. Those are the things that, you know, make your brain start doing backflips. And you know, what's more fun than that?
No, exactly. I've tried to speak to other radio hosts, and they kind of just clear me off, you know, because I'm talking about a psychedelic.
Yeah.
But
well, welcome to the late night alternative.
Thank you. Glad to be on. But yeah, I just find it really interesting. I just find it, you know.
Well, look, get yourself on, get yourself on the internet. And start finding the people with some actual answers. Definitely loads of these tests have been done. The fact that we now have MRI scanners, magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, means that we're now able to look at how the brain functions in a way that we've never been able to at all in the whole of human history. So questions like that, what is the brain really doing? What is the difference between perception and reality, are being answered now in a way that was hitherto never possible. So, yeah, rather than being specifically interested in DMT, check that stuff out, man. Look at what neurologists are finding out about how the human mind works, because it is fascinating.
It is fascinating, yeah. It is fascinating. It could be any, you know, there could be so many opportunities, you know. There could be so many things that we don't know.
Oh, well, undoubtedly that is true. I mean,
you know,
I think people who are so far able to create synthetic consciousness have got as far as spiders, or not even as far as spiders.
Was it Jonathan on before,
Yeah.
And he was talking about aliens.
Was he? I'm just trying to remember. No, I don't think he was.
Who was someone on before that were talking about aliens or something?
I'm trying to remember the conversations we've had tonight. I don't necessarily remember aliens coming up. I could be totally wrong about that. Do you remember any of this, Hayley?
There's been so many words I don't understand. It's kind of all just gone into like a mush now.
yes, no, you're right. He was talking about how if there are other life forms, that they would very likely be incredibly similar to us, because where the origins of life form would probably follow similar paths. So yeah, there was some talk of aliens.
But I was watching something the other day. I'm sure you've heard of Joe Rogan.
I have,
and he basically said people think that, you know, if aliens are out there, they're going to come in these big, goofy spaceships and all that, and they're going to be wearing, like, silver hats, and it's going to be all, you know, like the cliché alien look kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, well, if they're smart enough to travel from out of the solar system or from another dimension, then surely they're smart enough to be invisible, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, it's like, maybe it could be completely BS, but then again, it could be possible. Maybe they're here and we just don't have the senses to sense them.
Well, this goes back to what we were talking about with dimensions. If they're capable of existing in a dimension we can't perceive, we would have no idea they were here. But if they were able to perceive multiple dimensions, or, you know, a number of dimensions larger than our own, they might be in those dimensions, and we can't see them, but they can see us.
But maybe we can communicate with them consciously through our consciousness.
Maybe we can. What a way to end this conversation, Niall. Thank you so much for calling. Hopefully we'll speak to you again at some stage.
Thanks for having me on, Rufus. I'm a big fan.
All right, well, cheers, man. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Ciao.
Uncut after hours conversation for the up all night generation. Late night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Yeah, we're back. Oh, we're back. Need to stop looking at Twitter and actually broadcast. After all, that is what they're paying me for.
Surprised you can see it on that phone.
Hayley's very upset because I've got dead pixels on my phone, so I've got these big pink lines running across my screen. Just very annoyed with
me. How long has
it
been like that?
Well, I thought I was on a contract that allowed me to upgrade my phone every year, because I was paying quite a lot of money. And then I phoned them and said, oh, I think I'm on this contract, so I've got these dead pixels on my phone. Can I upgrade my... Totally wrong about that. It's every 2 years. So I think it's been like that for about 13 months.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've got to wait till July before I can get another one. I could pay to have the screen
yourself.
Replaced.
I think you deserve it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, one of the things that Noel was inferring there is, you know, if there were beings from other places who were smart enough to get here, there might be all sorts of ways that they would be able to be here without us knowing they were here. I'm actually rather more given to the idea put forward by Neil deGrasse Tyson. You can tell that I watch a lot of Neil deGrasse Tyson on the internet because he is the man I keep quoting. But he had this idea. It's not that there could be life on other planets. Mathematically, there are so many stars and so many planets in the universe that, you know, are so far away we can't see, that mathematically there is almost certainly life on other planets. It's just that we can't see them or get to them or talk to them or anything like that. In terms of the expansion of the universe, there are planets that have existed and been hanging around near suns for a lot longer than we have. So they could be millions of years ahead of us in terms of evolution, meaning they could be millions of years smarter than us and more able than us. It might well not be simply, is there life on other planets? More that the life on those planets is so smart that when it looks back and sees us, it would be the same as us looking at a planet full of worms. That they would be so much smarter than us, they look at us and like, oh, why would we bother with them? Would you bother traipsing across the universe to get to a planet full of, you know, bacteria? Would it be worth your effort? Would you even bother with that?
No.
That we could just be that dumb. I think the example Neil deGrasse Tyson gives is, it's, I think, 0.3% difference in the DNA between us and chimpanzees.
Wow.
So if it's only 0.3, that difference...
And that's just the hair, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's and that's right here, right now. That tiny difference, it would... If they had, you know, 5% difference or 10% difference, how much smarter might they be than us?
Yeah.
So would they bother coming at all? They're probably just busy getting on with it, looking at what we're doing to our little insignificant blue dot floating around in space and think, oh, let them get on with it. They'll soon eradicate themselves and yeah, we won't bother. That genuinely informs everything I think about the world. We're all the astronauts who have, you know, been in orbit and look back at Earth say, once you see it as one thing, once you see this little planet, all of the problems, all the things that we blow up in our heads as being these huge issues, once you see this little blue marble, you think, surely the things on that tiny little dot could sort themselves out. That once you have that perspective, surely it's our mission to do the best we can for everything on this planet to advance together, because we are so close to just wiping ourselves out. Unless we start working together, we'll be dead. So we've got to work together to maintain life on Earth so that we can continue from this incredible starting point and explore out across the universe. Absolutely. Who knows what we're capable of?
I feel like you need to burst into a Whitney Houston song or something.
I believe the genomes are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Something like that anyway. Somebody who I'm sure is an advanced life form is Barry in Weston-super-Mare. Hello, Barry.
Rupert, how are you, Rufus?
Oh, bobbing along, Barry.
Extremely.
Are you ringing up because you're very upset that you're always my favourite caller, Barry, and now Jonathan's snatched the crown?
No, I think he's far more deserving than me of it. What an absolutely intelligent young person. I've been absolutely fascinated listening to you two tonight, so the new Patrick Moore and Brian Cox.
Well, I'm sure it's Jonathan who has the boyish good looks of Brian Cox, so that leaves me as basically the games master.
Can I just welcome Ailey on a debut this evening?
Oh, hiya. How are you?
I'm doing really well, Ailey. Nice to talk to you. I reckon they've been, you know, the extraterrestrials.
They've been.
In Weston.
I reckon they've been. They've seen Jacob Rees-Mogg and they thought, let's sod off.
Yeah, I think that's about the size of it.
Yeah, no, but it really has been thoroughly enjoyable. And I don't know whether Niall is aware of the Sunday night show, Howard Hughes, on
yes.
Talk Radio.
I produce that, I'll have you know.
Seriously?
Yes.
Seriously?
Oh, what an absolutely excellent show, Ailey.
Oh, that's kind.
See, this is why Barry's my favourite caller.
You're mine now, too.
Now, Barry, last time we spoke, were you preparing to do some sort of running?
Yeah, I've got an half marathon on the March the 18th here in Weston-super-Mare.
Is it a half marathon, did you say?
I'm doing the half, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's an Olympic medalist, a guy called James Cracknell, who's...
The rower?
Yeah, a rower. The people who used to run it, there was some sort of fallout. So James Cracknell was in Weston doing some corporate stuff, and he thought, what a nice place, really, to get a run going. So, yeah, that'll be a good one to do. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, I dip massively. Sometimes I start running and I get super into it. It's never last more than a few weeks, if I'm perfectly honest. I think about 10 weeks of running, and then I'm like, oh, I can't be bothered with this. But people who do marathons tell me there's nothing like it. That once you've got people in the streets cheering you on, it's like having turbo boosters. Is that your experience, Barry?
It is, yeah. And you know, a lot of what you've been talking about tonight, I mean, I think running to me is quite a simple thing. It's just a question of self-discipline. It's just a question of getting out. You start to enjoy it, and as you get a little bit fitter, and then you start to experience a lot of what they call runner's eyes. And, you know, it ties in with what we've been talking. I think they call them endorphins.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're really in a state of heightened awareness. I'm not saying every run, but, you know, it can be quite often that you get that. It's a sense of well-being. And I'm a little bit I'm a little bit hooked on it because, you know, at my age, it's nice to feel healthy. It's nice to feel well.
Yeah.
But the thing I was going to just mention to you is a couple of things, actually, down here in Somerset. We, my wife and myself were in the lounge on Friday about 2:30, and we got the old earth tremor, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Did you feel that?
Yeah, it was about 2 seconds, Ailey, it lasted. And the strange thing was, my wife was watching telly, and I was reading a book on the old 1950s rock and roller, Jerry Lee Lewis. And it certainly rocked for a couple of seconds.
There's a whole lot of shaking going on.
There certainly was, yeah. Yeah, fascinating book, by the way. But the other thing I wanted to mention, I don't know whether you watched it, the Channel 4 show on the Channel 4 programme, rather, on Cheddar Man on Sunday.
No, I was out on Sunday. I missed it. But I read some of the online stuff about Cheddar Man.
Mm. Well, yeah, it was really interesting. They took the DNA, 10,000-year-old Cheddar Man, as he's known,
yeah.
And surprisingly was blue-eyed and black-skinned.
Yeah.
It was to do from the trek from Africa right the way through, and, you know, they settled in Cheddar, sort of hunter-gatherers, and... You know, it just made me realise as well when you get the sort of the white little Englanders, and, you know, and then you see actually what's in our roots and you appreciate where we come from.
Yeah.
Do you mean near Cheddar Gorge?
Cheddar Gorge, yeah. Gorge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's just up the road from us, Ailey.
Yeah, yeah, I know. My husband used to live in Weston, so.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a Weston lad, was he?
Yeah, well, not originally, but for a couple of years.
Oh, smashing.
Yeah.
Actually. So I don't know whereabouts you are, but...
Yeah, I mean, not far from about... I'm about sort of, what, 8 minutes run from the from where I live to the town.
Check him out. 8 minutes run.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there might be other fellas who reckon it's a 20-minute walk, but not for Barry. It's an 8-minute run, flat. 7 on a prevailing wind, good day.
Try me best, Rufus. Rufus, you're going to try and build on this, because I think this show has been fascinating. I mean, there's a lot of mileage in this. I mean, I'm sure you and Jonathan, you know, I mean, it's been a really... So it's just flown by two hours plus. Really enjoyable.
Well, look, I would love to say yes, but the God's honest truth, Barry, is I'm about the limit of what I actually know anything about at all. So I think there's probably people out there better placed to tackle a show like that.
You might be doing yourself down a little bit, Rufus. You know your stuff, mate.
Well, this is what I was explaining to Hayley. You see, when you talk to people who really understand this stuff, it's a joy. I understand the theory behind some of it, but in terms of the actual kind of dotted I's and crossed T's, I've been very lucky in my career to get to do some broadcasting with real proper scientists. And once you get somebody who really knows their subject inside out, my gosh, there's no greater joy. So whilst it would be lovely to think I could do a show like that, I just know how little I know, and I'm encouraged to claim that fact, because the wise man knows how little he knows, whereas the idiot thinks he knows everything.
Well, I tell you, as a 75-year-old, I've learned an awful lot during my life, and you know, you never stop learning. The thing that I've, from tonight's show, you look at Jonathan, you know, as a young person, and the greater knowledge that becomes available to them,
yeah.
I mean, just how much our understanding will increase, you know. I mean,
yeah.
with bright guys like that, you know, and you know, the additional knowledge that you gain, because, I mean, it's just a drop in the ocean, isn't it? One lifetime, I know, but, you know, we gradually get there bit by bit.
Yeah. I was listening to a fascinating podcast, I think, a couple of weeks ago. So I don't have all the facts at my fingertips, because it was a thing I heard in passing. But it is that the average intelligence doubles with every three generations, I think it is. So actually... Oh, not
as
only
Wikipedia
does...
grows.
Yeah. No, it's that. But that's the thing, is it's not actually what is known... That kind of intelligence, it's actual being able to process ideas grows. That basically within every three generations, the rate that a society deals with the people in its society increases because improvements are made. You come into the world, you say, oh, hang on, why do you do it like that? There's a better way of doing that. And so you solve the problem in your generation, and then the generation behind you comes and looks at that and says, oh, actually, there's a faster way of doing that. Again, tied to the top of the show, wouldn't it be a great idea if you could just walk out into the street and hire a car? Oh, somebody's already doing that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's we stand on the shoulders of giants. We are building forward all the time. So when that generation comes in, the problems that there are to solve have already been solved. New problems emerge, and that generation solves those problems. But those problems have a greater degree of complexity. Therefore, to solve the problem that now exists, you have to be smarter to solve that problem. So it's not just how much do you know, that kind of intelligence, it's how good are you at thinking. And on average, the intelligence every three generations is doubled. So I completely concur with you, Barry, in that the flip side of that is you can look at writings from ancient Greece where they are saying about the young people coming through, they're self-obsessed, they're vain, they're narcissistic, all they're interested in is having a good time, there's no respect for what went before. We're going to go to... Civilization will go to hell in a handcart in the hands of these people. It is just the pattern of life. As you start to mature, you look at the generation coming behind and you think they're idiots, but the bizarre truth of the matter actually is that they are probably smarter than you. And so we can be terrified about what's to come, but actually there is another way of being incredibly excited, especially living in the information age. Jonathan, that young man, talking about theoretical physics, basically all stuff he's learned from the internet. So don't get me wrong, I see that there are all sorts of problems that the internet gives us, but it also provides an opportunity for smart young people to really put bells and whistles on just how smart they are.
Yeah, I think the difficulty, though, Rufus, is that we've got to make sure our values are right. You know, with the new technology, it's a little bit like the Luddites, whose intentions were... I mean, I could sympathise with them. You know, smash the machinery, because that machinery is going to take away our right to sell our labour.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously we've moved on from there, but I remember the promises with the new technology that we were going to have more leisure time. You know, it was all going to be there for the benefit of the masses. Some of it's not worked out like that. So I think, you know, yeah, we're living with it, and it, you know, and it's exciting what it can produce. But we've got to retain values. We've got to decide, as you touched on, you know, that we've got to look after this planet. We've got to look after each other.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe the new technology in its own way will help to put those views and values forward, because I think it's essential that, you know, that we do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. The interesting thing is, I mean, you talk about the Luddites. The reports recently that I've read are about automation within every sphere of life. So you go to the supermarket, there are self-checkouts. You go to warehouses, there are now warehouses where there are literally two people working there because the whole thing is packed by robots. Actually, the reason that, you know, that there's a certain class of people that are struggling is that a lot of the jobs that used to be available to those people are now being performed automatically by robots, essentially. So there are huge gains in terms of some of the more mundane tasks will be automated and handled by non-humans, essentially, as wacko as that sounds. But it's happening now. It's a genuine concern. But what are we doing in terms of our governance? What are we doing in terms of organising our society where those people aren't left behind? And that seems to be the real issue, that we're not providing anything for the people who used to do those jobs to have fulfilled, meaningful lives or, you know, meaningful work.
Yeah, you know, and that's where the politics comes in, and that's where you know, we've got to have a government that's got to address these things. Now, my little effort, and I'm sure that it's more about just my own principle. You know, I won't use Tesco checkouts. I'll say I'm happy to. They say, well, you know, we'll show you how to use them. I said, you know, I could use them. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
The reason that I won't use them is, and I always say to them, I had a job for 50 years, you know, and I want someone else to enjoy the benefit of that, so they can start to improve their living standards. And I say to the people, see, you know, when they're saying, oh well, we'll instruct you, I'll say, you know, you'll be instructing me, but in the process, you'll be putting yourself out of a job. Now, I know probably what I'm doing is going to have zero effect, but I don't know, I just cling to the fact that we've got to do something that will control this thing, because it could turn out to be a beast, couldn't it?
Yeah. Well, look, it's I think that we all feel that about so much of what's going on in the world at the moment. What difference will my one small effort make? But, you know, each snowflake is required for the avalanche to occur.
Yeah, you've got it. And nice talking to you, Rufus.
Always nice talking to you,
Barry. All I would say is keep the faith, comrade.
Back at you, Barry.
The radio show for people who know the best part of the day is the night.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Well, we're into the final furlong. It's already Tuesday and John's on the line. Hello, John.
Hello, Rufus.
How are you, sir?
I'm okay, mate. Not too bad, thank you.
Whereabouts in the world are you?
Birmingham.
Ah, the Midlands.
Yeah. Like a beautiful little spot, like covered in trees, silly oak like.
Smashing.
Yeah, so it's okay. Yeah, cool.
So what do we owe the pleasure of your call?
Well, so I've been listening tonight, really, First of all, I'd like to thank you, mate, like, for being so open-minded and, you know, not slamming down your opinion on people who come across with something that, like, science would sort of, you know, straight away, you know, say, like, that's just, no, like... But, so thank you for that one, first of all.
Well, I try, John.
Yeah, nice, all right. Secondly, as well, if we get to talk about psychedelics, I'd just like to say for everyone listening that it's my opinions only.
Okay.
And I don't want to be an advocate, you know what I mean, in that respect.
No, look, we can have the conversation without this being an endorsement.
Yeah, cool. Great, yeah.
Cool, man. So, what do you want to say?
Well, so many things, mate. So many things. Like, you know, like the topics that have been spoken about tonight, especially about the automation one.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's happening at the moment. I don't know if you caught that one on BBC Two. Like, I can't remember the presenter of it, like, but he went to Silicon Valley.
Oh,
and,
right.
They call themselves the Disruptors. Right, that they want to automate absolutely everything. So, like, human beings no longer have a purpose.
Yeah.
Like, it's really dark. It's really sort of...
Well, there is. I mean, look, the dream of that is that with once human beings don't have to work, we're capable of living lives of leisure. That everything is provided for us, you know, and we're free to just get on with hanging out and having fun and not having to worry.
Where does the cash come from?
Where does the cash come from?
They're going to sort that one out as well. Like, it's like what they're doing at the moment, like with this like cashless society. You know, they're trying to get that one on board as well, like. But, like, if you think about it, I mean, like, you know, I might be sort of a little bit sort of thinking on a negative, like, but it hasn't been so great so far, do you know what I mean?
are you suggesting you might be cynical about some of this stuff, John?
To heart, to basically, Rufus. Sorry, what was that, mate?
No, I was saying, are you suggesting you might be cynical about some of the motivations of the people in charge?
Just a little bit.
Well, I can't think you've been given any reason to feel that way, John.
I know. I know. I mean, either. But there's one thing as well, Rufus, like that. You were talking about like the brain and it's like its capabilities and that.
Yeah.
But haven't they discovered like that the heart and the gut has got more neurons surrounding it?
Yeah,
than,
I mean,
than the brain itself.
Again, I don't know too much about this, but there seems to be some kind of system whereby your gut is solving problems.
That's it. There's a gut-brain axis.
Yeah, and that you're. I think when I heard this explained, they were very clear to say it's not that your gut has a brain. Don't start thinking that there's a separate, you know, like you've got all these brains around your body, but...
I don't know. I tend to differ on that one, Rufus. Like the body's intelligent, like it holds memory.
No, John, you're getting me wrong. I'm saying that there people are quick to say that, you've got all these brains around your body. That's not what this research was saying. It was saying that your gut is problem solving,
right?
So it's not got a brain. It is taking in information, and it is doing things in an intelligent way.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you trust your gut. That one, it's so simple as that. Like, you know,
I'll tell you what, John. You keep talking. I'll Google it, and then maybe we stand half a chance of elucid being. Smart cool. about this rather than stupid. So you keep talking, I'll Google.
But your digestive system's quite linked into the brain, isn't it, though? Because it's like if you're hungry, they say don't eat for 20 minutes and then your brain catches up with you, that type
and
of
you
thing.
Yeah. And it's like, I've seen this brilliant TED talk as well. I'm terrible for names. I can never remember names. But it was like some guy, like, and he was saying about like the gut-brain axis, right?
Right.
And it's like the only thing that we, it's like in soil, there's a bacteria and it's part of the mycological family, like the mushroom family.
Yeah.
And there's this bacteria, I think it's like, I might have got the pronunciation wrong, like Bacterium vaccae or vac, vac, yeah, I think.
Sounds
Bacterium
good.
Vaccae.
Sounds good.
It's close enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what it does, it calms like the whole system, like it stops anxiety, and it's like it can only be found in soil. And so, like, we're being divorced and taken away from, like, you know, being on the earth, like living in cities, tarmac, concrete, bricks, blah blah blah. And so we've been taken away from like the soil. And it's like if you see kids, like they eat soil, you know. As children, like we put a bit of soil in our gobs, haven't we?
Yeah, there was a thing a few years back. I remember that was essentially we have evolved eating things out of the ground, and part of what our bodies require are the microbes in soil. So the fact that in the last 30, 40 years we've become obsessed with, like, don't cook your potatoes till you've scrubbed them under the tap.
Basically,
we're rubbing off some of the things that our bodies need.
No,
I'm going to Psychology Today in January 2017. So I am quoting from this. This is not what I've written. I don't own this. But it says, researchers turn their microscopes to the hidden environments within the gut. and they have discovered something remarkable. There's an entire ecosystem of bacteria and a vast neural network operating in our guts. This ecosystem is our second brain and comprises of some 100 million neurons, more than the spinal cord. This is not a thinking brain. It does not reason, write poetry, or solve multilinear regressions. But mounting evidence suggests that your gut's health strongly influences your mood. It's not just a stomachache. It's not just that a stomachache can sell your day, it's more than that. The enteric nervous system is a mesh-like network of neurons that lines the entire digestive tract. It causes the sensation of nervous butterflies or a pit in your stomach that are innate parts of our psychological stress responses. Up to 90% of the cells involved in these responses carry information to the brain rather than receiving messages from it, making your gut as influential to your mood as your head is, maybe even more. Even crazier is that our second brain is actually only half of us. Inside the digestive system, the enteric nervous system mainly communicates with bacteria. These are commonly separate creatures that make up our microbiome. And there are just as many of them inside us as our own human cells. So there are things living within us, and it's our gut that talks to them, and then our gut talks to us, and is basically the intermediary between the things living in us and us.
Scary.
Yeah. Sounds fantastic, sounds good. There's a heart as well, Rufus as well, that's got neurons around it as well. The one thing that I was going to say, because, I no longer try to think anymore, you know, I no longer try to...
Don't do it.
No, thinking's overrated. But it's if you look at it from, youth to, growing and that, to your adulthood and that, it's you can look at it as kind of like a booster rocket to sort of get to a point where you no longer need to do that anymore. You're sort of, in a place where... it's that one as well. It comes into being in the moment, doesn't it? Because if you're thinking, you're either sort of pasteurising, or futurising.
Yeah.
There
was a really big book about this that I think a lot of people found really influential, which was, I think, called something like "Don't Think."
Eckhart Tolle or something like that.
The Power of Now is about something slightly... I think that's led to a lot of the kind of mindfulness and being in the moment. That's really more the Power of Now. The Don't Think was basically that
your
brain, as far as I understand it, and again, I could be completely wrong about this, you are better off doing your own research than taking my word for it, but I think it was about the fact that your brain is processing the world around you. And that once you apply conscious thought to things, you can talk yourself out of the thing your brain is already telling you to do. So you should basically just go with your gut. If you feel that something is the right decision, just go with it, because actually that's the truest version of what your brain has worked out it needs to do and what you need to do.
Yeah, I'm laughing. So, do you remember the Double Take Brothers on the Fast Show?
Yeah, I do.
that's the brain one, isn't it? It's you're in the moment, and then you think about it. It's like,
yeah. See if you can find any of the Double Take Brothers, Sam. Maybe we'll play out with a bit of that, because those sketches were daft as all hell.
Oh, brilliant. Rufus, it's been brilliant, and it's a great, great show, mate, and thanks for being so open-minded and allowing people to, to explore stuff and that. Brilliant.
Well, you're very welcome, John. It goes to the heart of a thing I find puzzling and troubling at the moment in the world in which we live, which is we've got to the point, and look, I'm not suggesting social media is wholly responsible, but you definitely see the effects of this on social media, which is an idea is put forward as being the right idea, and anybody who disagrees with that idea is immediately leapt upon. And look, if you're on the right, you'll feel that, you can't say anything and the left jump on you. If you're on the left, people on the right jump on you. We are sold there's only one way of thinking about anything. And I grew up in a generation, it feels to me, where a kind of plurality of ideas was absolutely what we all...
We needed.
Well, that we had it drilled into us that, we'll listen to what everybody's got to say. And look, this is where I will possibly get myself into trouble. I mean this with absolutely all the respect in the world to all vested parties. Where we are now aware that our society has not created opportunities for people from all backgrounds to have their say, we are now at a point where people from those backgrounds, be it, defined by gender or defined by sexuality or defined by race or defined by religion, whatever definition people find themselves in, they say, well, me and my lot haven't had a fair say in all of this. And that actually the people who really have been able to say how things are or how the world works tend to be white, middle-aged, middle-class men. And we need to have a few less white, middle-aged, middle-class men speaking so that other voices can be heard, so that we can get a fuller picture of the human experience, so that we can then work out how to treat everybody more fairly and more equitably, and that everybody's voice and everybody's experience is heard. And I get that, and I'm largely in support of that. The problem is, and I'm not suggesting I have a solution for this, is that once you say to one group, you can't speak anymore, you're kind of providing the same conditions that people who are saying this is abhorrent that my tribe haven't been heard, experienced for so long and rebelled against. So it feels to me like you've got to let everybody say their piece, but I can also understand that if you come from a background where you feel like your voice hasn't been heard, the idea that the other lot have to keep speaking too maybe doesn't feel particularly helpful. So in my life, what I try to do is just listen to what everybody has to say and not judge too quickly. But I also accept that kind of at the moment, that's not the way that the world feels things should be, and that we should be telling, you've got to shut up now. I don't know. I find that kind of troubling, but I can understand why we've got there.
I do. I don't like it at all, Rufus. Like, I think there's like some agendas going on, like that. And I'm not going to say too much about it, like, but there's somebody somewhere pushing agendas like of like how we should be, and it's not giving free speech, critical thought, critical thinking. It's all about it's hard to say it without actually saying what I'm on about. You know what I mean? But I do think there's like some quite sinister agendas going on at the moment, and you know.
Well, I think, look, by and large, I think any time you find yourself in the group that is being asked to pipe down, the agendas of the other sides feel more sinister. But I think what we can...
Everyone should have a say.
Everyone should have a say. That's absolutely right.
There should be no censorship, like, because like if we don't speak it out, you know, if we can't talk it out, then it's going to get locked up inside, it's going to fester, boil, and it will come out in some other way.
Yeah. However, what I think is also kind of maybe worth considering is that if you've got a lot of people who say, our voice hasn't been heard, all we're doing really is recalibrating. And at the moment, what's happening is we are recalibrating. And because we have grown up in a world is essentially where a lot of white, middle-aged, middle-class men grew up thinking, well, the world is like this and I just get to plough on and do the thing I wanted to do. Now they're being told, actually, no, you don't. We're going to do things slightly differently. It feels outrageous and it feels sinister. So, look, all I think it is part of a large-scale calibration. But my overall point, John, should be that rather than damning anyone out of hand, you give them a chance to say their piece and examine what it is they're actually saying. So, John, thank you for being a caller that allowed us to hear what you had to say and to maybe spend some time pondering on its merits.
All right, thanks, Ray, first, man.
Cheers, John.
Keep doing what you're doing. Yeah. Nice one, bro.
Cheers, man. Well, there you go. John in Birmingham. That just about brings us to the end of our time here tonight. Hayley, our first time together.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been an absolute joy. I don't know what juju it is you brought in with you, but it led to some of the best calls I've ever had here standing in for Ian Lee, who, as far as I'm aware, will be back with you and with Kath tomorrow at... what time does it start?
10
p.m. Thanks very much. But now... Friends, time to go.